This is our final Glee Chat Flashbacks episode before we get on to Season 6, which starts next week. So we're rounding up the end of Season 2 today, which will bring us, I suppose, full circle, which means that Glee Chat in general has recorded for every single season of Glee before we end up finishing the season, you know, the series with Season 6. But yeah, we've got Jack and Caitlin with us today, as well as myself, Natalie, to finish off Season 2 of Glee on Flashbacks. What we were doing was just watching the, you know, the series in chronological order, picking out the most important episodes that we felt like should be rehashed. You know, some of them were, you know, voted, some of them were sort of unanimous in terms of, you know, what we thought should be shown. And this is our last one. We're doing Prom Queen, which is 220. And we're doing New York, which is the finale of Season 2, where, you know, New York and Nationals. So, yeah, we're going to go into Prom Queen first, which involves a lot of unnecessary drama over a plastic crown, which I've never really understood because, I don't know, maybe schools in Australia do that now because they're trying to be more like America, but we don't have any of that kind of competitive stuff at our school dances, so.
Similar, but very different. Like, it's just, like, bell and bowl of the ball, like, and that's voted by, well, for me at least, it was, like, voted by teachers and, like, who the best students were, sort of thing, or the best couple was.
Oh, okay, that's really weird.
What did you have?
Nothing. Like,
oh,
no,
okay.
Like, it was, there were dancers, there were not competitions involved.
Like, oh, it wasn't really, like, a competition, it was just, like, because you can't really start, like, blackmailing teachers and stuff to get you for them to vote for you.
I suppose so. No, we didn't have anyone crowned our teen ruler of any type. So yeah, no, that was not a thing. But anyway, a few of the main parts of this episode. One of the first ones, which ends up kind of cutely, I suppose, but is one of the less important plot points overall in the drama. Is, you know, everyone sort of complaining about, you know, having dates, not having dates, what they're going to do, dresses, etc. And an aspect I really liked was, like, a lot of the girls in Glee Club are, like, quote-unquote competing with each other. Like, all of the prom candidates are in Glee, like, so much for Glee being, like, super unpopular. But they're not, like, cutting each other down. They're sort of campaigning, but they're all really nice to each other about their dresses and, you know, all of that. But anyway, Mercedes decides she's not going because she's got no date. And then Rachel tries to ask her to go with her, and they end up deciding to go together with Sam on their prom on a budget. So, yeah, I guess to start with, you know, before that date starts getting invaded by other people, what did you think of that little threesome doing prom together as adorable friends? Is this, Jack, did you like kind of seeing this, like, do you sort of... Obviously, this sort of ended up being the start of Sam Sadie's, which is quite important to you, I know. So, yeah, how do you feel about this little prom on a budget three-way date?
I loved it, because it is the start of Sam Sadie's. And Mercedes talking, like, Mercedes breaks my heart so much in this episode.
When
just like
to Rachel at the
lobby. Yeah. Like, because she's so, I mean, I guess it's more like akin to Amber Riley's acting portrayal, but, like, it's such a subtle, like, I mean, it's such a subtle... what's the word? Subtle, it's just subtle acting, and she really, really comes across as somebody who really is sad, and she says she doesn't need a man, but it would be nice to have one. And I think that, I mean, not me personally, but a lot of, like, girls in high school probably relate to like, Mercedes now, so I loved it, and especially because it does lead into Sam Sadie's. It breaks my heart. Breaks my heart.
Yeah. Caitlin, if you were in this position, I don't know what happens at prom. I don't know what happens in schools normally. But yeah, would have you gone, what is it they call it? Would have you gone stag, or would have you preferred to go with Sam and Rachel together in a strange, non-sexy threesome?
I mean, I went to prom in a group of people, so this makes complete sense to me. I thought it was adorable. I went to with like a group of 5 people, so. It's like uneven amounts of people who just want to go hang out together makes total sense to me. Like, prom was not this intense when I was in high school. Like, it was not this intense. It was not anything anyone actually cared about. We didn't even have divided up proms. Like, junior and seniors both went to the same prom, like all of this stuff. So, you know, we had prom royalty, but it wasn't anything anyone campaigned for. And after that night, no one gave a crap. So it was really way more casual than this. But I thought it was adorable. They were cute. And it was just three people who wanted a connection and friendly faces to go with went.
It was really, what was really good about that is how in Rumors, I wasn't on last week's episode to talk about it, but how when Rachel asks Sam, like, he does, like, tell her no, but he doesn't completely cut her down about it. He just says, you're not my type, and that was obviously because he was hiding the fact that he was homeless. Mm. And then now, like, how that comes back in this episode and how he says yes, like, and she, it's just a really nice, really, really nice friendship moment, which I really appreciated.
Yeah. There should have always been, Sam and Rachel, I always would have liked to see more time spent, like, with those two characters together.
And we will in season six, not in the greatest way. Okay.
why do you say that? I don't know if I want to know.
Oh, I read a little bit of spoiler, but it's not, like, terrible, but yeah.
Anyway, yeah, I was going to say, Caitlin, like, how much of a stigma is it that you have to go, like, in a couple and that you have to get, like, asked and stuff?
I mean, maybe my high school experience was completely different, but no one cared. Like, most people seemed to go in groups when at my high school, so not having a date was not a thing. Like,
no one cared. Imagine if you were actually with someone, like if you had a boyfriend or a girlfriend, you would go with them anyway. Like, you would, if you know, they went to another school, you might be able to invite them or whatever. But, like, I don't understand why, like, the whole, like, asking people to be your date for a dance like that. I don't know. I don't get it. I don't get it. I don't get any of that culture, so.
I don't get it either, and I live here.
Okay, good. Good, all right. Just so we're clear. And then the date obviously gets a little bit invaded, or sort of, you know, it gets split a bit more definitively into two pairs because of the return of our good friend Jesse. So he comes back to town in order to sing at Rachel, which is fun. But, yeah.
They could have had it all.
They could have had it all. And look, they communicate so well in that song, and it's so overdramatic, but we'll get to that.
It is.
Just basically, first of all, like, Jesse, what is going on with Jesse? Like, how genuine a person do you think Jesse is? And I'm going to give this one to Caitlin, because I know she has
some
obviously we see in the end of season one that he has a little bit of drama, you know, with the, you know, Shelby and the eggs, and they even kind of address it in this episode. She was like, it makes no sense, at one point you were telling me you loved me and then you threw eggs. I'm like, yeah, it's because they aired the episodes in the wrong order. But it was, you know, with Jesse here, you know, he's not really out to get anyone or, you know, screw anyone over, but he still, you know, sort of sounds his complete ridiculous self. So, yeah, basically, how genuine do you think Jesse is as a person, you know, regardless of his, you know, overdramatic and sort of ridiculous way of presenting himself?
I think he's, at least the way I read Jesse, is very much, he has a first place loyalty, and that's what he's going to stick to, and you can be pretty sure he'll be genuine to that. So, like, in season one, it was to Vocal Adrenaline and Shelby, so he stuck with that. But that's gone, and so now he's more interested in his own interests because he has really nothing else going on. And I don't think he was being anything other than he likes Rachel, and he regrets what he did, so he's coming back for her. Like, he doesn't really antagonize Finn at the dance or anything necessarily, so he's just kind of there and hanging out and like, Rachel, I like you, let's do this thing, and she's like, okay.
I agree with that, and I also think it's because he, in this episode especially, like, he's very lost. Like, his school, like, his uni, whatever he did doesn't work out, and, you know, he thought that things would go better, and it hasn't. So now he's going back to sort of what he knows, like, and he knows that Rachel is there. And, like, then that leads into what you said, I think, Caitlin, like, how he's got that loyalty towards something he cares about a lot. So.
Well, and this is a bit of a sort of a tough question, I guess. But because I'm not still really sure. I know in my head what I think, but, like, looking at them kind of on paper or on the screen or whatever is, it's kind of a bit different. Do you think he and Rachel are good together? Because what I sort of noticed the most about them is that they definitely exacerbate each other, which you really see at their sort of dinner. Even when they first sing together in Rolling in the Deep, they're really talking, like, with their, like, they are both so on the same page with how they communicate in the world and how they do things. And then at the dinner, you kind of see them, you know, her being like, oh, he's so smart. And they both sort of get caught up in each other's own ridiculousness. Whereas Rachel and Finn, you know, bring each other back from, you know, they sort of level each other out a bit more and bring each other back and make, you know, each makes the other one a bit more able to cope with the general world, whereas Jesse and Rachel kind of exist in this bubble of ridiculousness, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. You know, there are certainly people like that in the world, and, you know, depending on their career path or whatever, it, you know, might, you know, never really be that much of a problem. But I guess, you know, that the way they are and their personalities, do you guys think that they're actually good together or that they're sort of bad for each other? Jack, what do you think?
I think they're a good example of, like, I think Jesse and Rachel are better for, like, a short-term relationship because they've got so many of the same qualities and characteristics, but doesn't necessarily mean that that's going to be a good thing in, like, the long run. Whereas why Finn and Rachel are so good is that they do conflict each other a lot, but they've gone through they've gone through a lot of shit, and then but that makes them last, like, long term because they worked a lot of things out. And but they are similar people in that sense. Whereas Rachel and Jesse are very similar, kind of in a good way. But I think if they were to try things, it is just more short term, like more sporadic, rather than like lasting long term. What do you think, Caitlin?
I think at this point, they're not going to be good together, just because they haven't mellowed enough to be, like, functional, like, long-term, like you were saying. But later down the line, like, when Jesse comes back later, he's mellowed more. Yeah. So I think if you give them some time to mature and then they come together when they're a little bit older, they could be very good for each other and they could motivate each other to be their best selves. But I think they do need to mellow a bit first.
Yeah. And that's why I've sort of come around to your theory, Natalie, about how they might work together in season 6 after all this. I mean, I don't think it's going to happen and whatever, but, like, if it was to happen, after all this time has passed, all this stuff has happened, they might be able to come back and be very well together.
Yeah, like, even if the last episode of the last scene of the last episode of season 6 is, like, him showing up or her bumping into him, like, in a coffee shop back in New York or something, I would like, one scene that they didn't even pay him for, that she was just like, you know, come on, just do this one thing. And I think that would just be really, it would just give me a lot of hope, because, I just see them as the kind of people, especially after we see Jesse in season 3, you know, the kind of people that they wouldn't have, they have the same values and they come from the same sort of mental place. And even if they both have kind of mellowed out, you'd hope you wouldn't really get, like, that much jealousy or issues about, like, career and stuff. Like, say Rachel's like, oh my god, I've got this contract to do, like, a 6-month show in London, you know, and Jesse's like, oh, but I'm, you know, teaching kids in, you know, New York or whatever. He'd be like, yeah, cool, go, do it, if you know what I mean. It wouldn't be, like, this big drama of choosing between him and other stuff. I think that they'd be really good at supporting each other in their careers, especially once they've mellowed out. They wouldn't be, like, crazy competitive like Kurt and Blaine. And Finn was always supportive of Rachel, but because he didn't share what they were doing, it meant she always felt, like, torn to come back to him. And while I do think that they obviously would have worked, you know, once they found out figured out what they were going to do with their lives, I think that Jesse really could work without that sort of, you know, conflict of loyalties for her as well. But at this point, they're so ridiculous together, and they really make each other worse. So, so the other big part of this episode, one of the biggest parts probably, is the Kurt and Blaine plotline, or Kurt's plotline, in which, you know, Kurt asks Blaine to prom, and we learn about Blaine's backstory and why he's a bit anxious about going to prom with Kurt. And then, you know, they go on to, you know, find out that Bert has a few of the similar concerns and issues as Blaine about what Kurt's trying to achieve. And, you know, things are sort of a little bit, I don't know, mixed feelings I have about the way that Kurt handles everything in regards to attending his prom. Obviously, he then later does suffer, you know, extreme victimization, but up until that point, I'm a little bit annoyed with him in this episode. So, Caitlin, what did you think of the way that sort of Kurt asked Blaine to the prom and hearing about Blaine's backstory and the way that Kurt handled that?
I think that was well handled. I thought it was a sweet moment, like, on Kurt's end, and that he is supportive because he's like, if you're not comfortable with this, if it's going to be really bad, we'll go to a movie. Don't worry about it. Like, he gives him the way out. So I think that was very well handled. But once he kind of, like, sinks his claws into the concept of going and going with his boyfriend, who's kind of like his trophy boyfriend, then he starts going crazy, and it's not so great. But that first moment I thought was really nice.
Yeah, I agree. Like, at that first moment in, like, the coffee, I genuinely believe that Kurt was genuine. Like, because he's always manipulative and stuff in the past. But at that point, I really liked them together. And I was like, yep, that's good. Kurt, like, he does want to go to prom really badly, but he was gladly, like, he would have been glad to just go see a movie with Blaine. But then, like you said, Caitlin, once he gets his claws in there, he moves him around a lot and, like a puppet.
It always made me wonder that, because I would like to believe that Kurt would have genuinely not pushed, you know, if Blaine hadn't said, you know, yeah, I'll try it. But he just seemed to be very kind of, you know, dangling the other option, but as soon as it's not that option, you know, as soon as Blaine's like, oh, I guess I'll try, you know, the way that he's so quick to respond, like, I feel bad, because obviously he doesn't have these issues, or, you know, yet, and he wants to go really badly, so of course he's going to be like, yes, thank you, we're going, and I do kind of wonder if he was a bit, I don't know, like a bit, or sort of only pretending to offer the other option, but I'd really like to believe that he wasn't, so, yeah, if you know what I mean, but yeah, he does, obviously the next step there is them sort of preparing for prom at the Hummel's house, and Kurt making his, outfit with his kilt, and, Finn thinking it's kind of cool, but Bert and Blaine both having a bit of a mixed opinion about that, and sort of Kurt's reaction to what they thought of it. So yeah, Caitlin, was this the part that sort of you were not so into his behaviour, or where did that sort of start to change for you in this episode?
Yeah, it was in that scene, and the first, like, 100 times maybe that I watched it, it didn't bother me, and then
the first 100 or so.
Yeah. To say, when I was shipping Clayne, I watched a lot.
I know.
But then later I started going, wait a second. So when he's like, when it's just kind of the shift when he realizes Blaine might not be on his side, and he has that line, he's like, well, I understand with what you've been through, and I was like, excuse me.
Yeah.
I do not think you do understand what he has been through, and you are being very condescending for what was clearly a trauma for your boyfriend. Yeah. So you are manipulating him into clearly feeling guilty over a completely natural reaction to the situation, and I did not like that.
He has so much anger. He's like, I'm wearing this. I worked hard on it. I'm going, you know, whether you guys like it or not. Like, shouldn't you be really, 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 really grateful that he is sort of fighting his own anxiety? Shouldn't you be making this, like, as easy for him as possible? Like, it's, I don't know about Blaine. Like, it just seems like he's really... He doesn't know how to not be selfish.
I think, too, like... On its own, the scene by itself, without any of the other interactions they have ever had as a couple, it wouldn't bother me as much because it's just Kurt's being a teenager. He's really excited about this. He is gonna go in this outfit that he thinks is fabulous. He's going with his fabulous boyfriend and he wants this all to be amazing, amazing night. So like he's being a teenager in that sense, but then you put it in the context of everything else and then you start to say, maybe it's not that he's being a teenager, but it's that there actually is an issue.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I just don't know. It's just, you know, I don't want to criticize Bert Hummel's parenting skills, but this kid does not know how to not be self-centered. Like, and it's not even like, oh, you're evil. It's like it doesn't even occur to him, like, that he, you know, might have other issues, that he shouldn't be, you know, that he should possibly be thinking outside of what he's thinking. And I just, I don't know, it's just really, you know, I don't know how thoughtless people were as teenagers. I don't remember that. That was a long time ago. Maybe this would be, like, natural from a natural reaction for most kids, and, you know, kids don't really take, you know, other people's issues that seriously. But, you know, I did find it a little bit hard to feel sorry for him kind of stomping off, being like, oh, people are oppressing Kurt, oh no. Like, it's like, well, no, that's not what's happening. It clearly is what you think is happening, but it's not, that's not what's happening. So, yeah, I don't know. That plot line kind of ends up tying into Santana and Karofsky's Bully Whips campaign. You know, because they're going to protect people from bullying. They sort of make Kurt and his gay date to prom, you know, one of their biggest projects, and sort of follow him around the school. And this kind of leads into a lot of conversations, apparently, between Kurt and Karofsky about, you know, how, look, no one's giving me a hard time. Maybe you should come out too. And you know, all of these sort of talks between Kurt and Karofsky. Karofsky having a bit of a breakdown and crying about, you know, his apologies to Kurt. He starts getting really intense about Kurt already, like, you know, about protecting him and all of that kind of stuff. So, yeah, just basically Karofsky in this episode, he's got some damage going on. He's clearly not in a great place. So, yeah, Jack, if you're back.
Yep.
What did you think of Karofsky's? Because obviously Santana, you know, she's not a bad person and she doesn't really believe in bullying and stuff like that. But she kind of is doing this bully whips thing for the prom points, apparently. Whereas Karofsky seems to take it very, very seriously, especially when it comes to Kurt. Sorry, that might have crashed really loudly. Especially when it comes to Kurt. So, yeah, what did you think of his kind of story in this episode, or the way that he kind of reacted to Kurt during this episode before prom?
I don't know if this is the start of, like, when he gets feelings for Kurt, but I do see what you're saying about how he gets very protective of Kurt, especially earlier on in the season when, like, what you said, Natalie, how he has this feeling that he and Kurt are in this whole drama together. Like, he's going through a lot of shit, but Kurt's there with him when it's not necessarily that way. But I would have really liked to have seen how, if this point carried on and Karofsky stayed, was more of a bigger presence show as the show carried on, to see the friendship. And I wish that this would have been the moment that would have, like, sparked that friendship, rather than, like, how they are going to do Karofsky later on, but how they could have handled him later.
Caitlin, I know you're not a massive fan of this character. Did you have any kind of feelings/opinions about his, breakdown/apology/bully-whipping, you know, work with Kurt, or whatever you want to call it?
I had actually forgotten about the apology scene, because I usually skip around this episode a lot for obvious reasons, haha. Yeah. But I usually skip that scene, so I had forgotten about it. So when I was watching it, it kind of, like, took me by surprise. I was a little taken aback by, like, how intensely apologetic he was. Like, you can tell he's really hurt and bothered by everything that he had done, which, you know, is good that he feels bad. And I don't know, I'm trying to figure out how to deal with him still. But also, Kurt is being pushy with him when he knows he's not comfortable, and it's just a really messy situation.
It's because Kurt's never been, like, the leader or, like, the good person to, or the person to give good advice. So he's like, this would be a great moment to come out, but not necessarily, Kurt. Everyone does it in their own time.
Yeah, it's, like, I get why Kurt would want that, you know, I mean, vindication not to even start, you know, with that point. But I get, you know, why Kurt would want that or how he thinks he's helping. But, yeah, it's a bit...
And I get it, but it's just a bit like... I get it, and I do understand, like, the character motivations behind that. And, like, so it does the trick, but, yeah.
Yeah. I think that they do a good job with Kurovsky of making you feel pretty, you know, pretty sorry for him. And, you know, it's pretty easy in this, you know, kind of show to you know, write someone off as a... I guess as a bad person and for what they've done, but... You know, many good people out there did, you know, worse things than him in high school. And I think he is quite an interesting character, and it is a pretty intense apology. But, I don't know. It's an odd situation. Kurt is quite pushy. I get that he wants to, you know, either... I don't know if he thinks he's being selfless there or not, or if that is a, you know... If that is a motivation of genuinely wanting to help someone, or, you know, I don't know. I don't know what goes on in Kurt's head. But, yeah. Caitlin, did it sort of change how you are anticipating Kurovsky in season 6 at all?
I mean, maybe slightly, but not enough to still be comfortable with it. Just for reasons we've discussed.
I mean, if they end up pulling that off in season 6, like, if they end up making that somewhat...
Very impressive.
If people are like, oh, yeah, I totally see how that works, and we're all just like, oh, yeah, okay, I'll just be shocked, like, if they manage to pull that off in some sort of acceptable way. I've got a feeling the whole thing's going to be played as a joke. Like, I've got a feeling it's going to be, like, look laughable to everyone outside of it, basically.
I think it's sort of meant to be like that as well.
Yeah, like,
I'm still.
Like, oh my god, this is so weird.
I'm still obsessed with your theory, Natalie, about how you said.
Faking it?
Yeah, that they're faking it.
Oh,
I'm still obsessed with that.
Please, Glee, give it to me. Because I don't think Kurovsky's a bad person. I don't want him to save Kurt or Blaine, but I don't think that he's, like, a bad person. I think that he deserves his life, you know, like, to go out.
Well, I mean, at the point of the show, or, like, where the character's at now, he's not a bad person.
No, of course
like,
not.
Like, it's season 6,
but
yeah.
But a lot of people don't want to see him with. You know, Kurt or Blaine ever, that they had just, you know, no, he's, you know, he's terrible. He doesn't deserve any happiness. I think he deserves happiness.
I think he does,
deserves happiness as his new self with people that aren't involved in his old life that he didn't like.
Yes.
Like, that would be nice. But,
just remember that scene in the episode On My Way when he tried to commit suicide, like how there was a little, like, flash into the future.
Yeah, and Kurt
Yeah, like, he needs that, like, not Blaine. Yeah.
He deserves happiness, you know, he deserves, you know, to have a good life with people who experience the goodness of his current self. I don't think that it's particularly healthy to go back and do that with, like, people that you once harassed. But, you know, I think that if, you know, they managed to become friends in some way, like Blaine and Kurovsky, that if they were faking it to piss off Kurt, okay, it's just fucked up, but I would love it so much. That's not what's happening.
Maybe they were faking it for, like, a good reason. Like, if they were faking it and they had a plan behind, I don't know, Blaine to get him back or something. I don't know.
Oh, but do we want Blaine back with Kurt anyway?
It's better. I'd rather Blaine and... Actually, I don't know if I'd rather Blaine and Kurt than Blaine and Kurovsky. I don't know.
Let's...
I don't know.
Let's
go with
either.
Yeah, let's go with that one.
Like, Caitlin's my very own Sophie's choice.
Oh, God.
If you had to pick, Caitlin, if you had to pick out of Kurt and Kurovsky, Blaine and Kurt, or Blaine and Kurovsky, which would you pick?
Oh, Jesus.
Or Kurovsky and Santana. Or Kurovsky and Santana.
No, not that.
I would go with Kurt and Blaine.
Really?
I would. Just
no.
because Blaine loves him. I don't think Blaine loves Karofsky. I don't think he'll get to that point.
Jesus Christ.
I agree with
you. Fair enough. Fair enough.
Whether that's a healthy love remains to be seen, but he does love Kurt.
He loves Cronuts more.
But who doesn't?
God. Oh my God. Oh my God. I was going through season 5 the other day to make the quiz for Hyperball. Like, so I had to read, like, the wiki entry for every article, like, every episode to get, you know, questions. And oh my God, some of the episodes in season 5 were weird. They were so weird.
I got 14 out of 16, I think, on that one.
You always do well. But I was really shocked that, like, that one episode with the Cronuts, when Kurt had, like, a hot body, it said, at least in the article, and I don't remember if it was quoted directly, like, in these words, but that, like, Blaine wasn't used to seeing Kurt as a sexual being. Hasn't he been having sex with him for 2 seasons? Like, he can have sex with him, but he's not used to him being seen as a sexual being for other human beings.
Yeah, for others, I think, yeah.
Still kind of weird.
Yeah.
Anyway, season 5, you have a lot to answer for. yeah. Let's move on from that, because the two plot lines with Kurt and Karofsky obviously culminate in them being elected prom king and prom queen. So Karofsky seems to be elected genuinely, as, you know, he's nominated with Santana. And then instead of one of the girl candidates, there was a write-in voting Kurt as prom queen, which we never really found out who that was responsible, you know, who was responsible for that. How many people out there really hate Kurt? Because we don't really see him getting harassed by that many people. Like, presumably Karofsky wasn't responsible for it because he, you know, looked rather horrified. But yeah, we never really find out the background of that. But apparently all of these anonymous haters vote Kurt prom queen in order to humiliate him. The first thing about this that I kind of, and the fandom in general is always like, why? Is, you know, why did Figgins...
Yeah.
Like, read out the
name. Yeah.
I've like, always thought that.
Like, why did he... Like, because there's two options here. And I always wonder which one it is, because Iqbal Thieber, who plays Figgins, is actually a really good actor. He's a very subtle actor. He's actually done some pretty good emotional stuff, even in Glee, but in other stuff as well. And there's two options here. Number one is that Figgins is totally oblivious and idiotic and doesn't know how to handle anything except read the paper in front of him, if you know what I mean, or, like, you know, doesn't know how to think outside the box, which is certainly viable for the way that he acts sometimes.
Yeah.
And the other option is that he is, you know, that everything that happens is because of how furious he is, if you know what I mean, that, like, he says it and he's just like, you know, he doesn't have a raging fit at them all, but he's so pissed and he's wanting to, like, shame them. And basically, because the way that he gives Kurt the crown when he comes back in is quite, like, I don't know, he gives him a look that's, like, quite, like, proud and, like, quite, you know, like, you know, good for you, kid, and, you know, but because they don't give him any dialogue aside from, like, just going along with it, it's pretty easy to believe the first option, that he's just an idiot. But yeah, I mean, he obviously could have saved a lot of damage if he'd just been like Santana Lopez, if you know what I mean, or just made something up instead of, you know, doing it. So yeah, I guess what was your opinion on, you know, how Figgins handled it? Would have you kind of made something up, or do you think he was trying to, like, shame people? Obviously, it did more damage to Kurt than anyone else, so perhaps he's just really hopeless and stupid. Jack, you said you'd wondered about that for a while.
I think another option also could be, like, so all the events happen, and then when all the Glee kids are, like, have left and they're all talking and doing all that, Figgins is still standing up there, and, like, we can presume that they've been gone for maybe, like, 10 minutes, 10, 15 minutes.
10 or 20, and,
yeah. Yeah, and in that time...
Hopefully he yelled at them.
Yeah, in that time, like, Figgins could have given them a huge... Them. Yeah, like, a huge speech, and then Kurt comes back in, and then it all happens. So, that, I mean, that's another option, but I've always wondered as well, like... Now, I remember on a very old episode of Glee Chat, like before I was on and I was listening and stuff, you mentioned something about Iqbal Thieber tweeting about his role on Community versus his role on Glee, and because I've just gotten into Community and I've watched all five seasons very fast, don't judge me. I've always wondered about how he views the characters in comparison. So if you could just mention what happened there.
I can't remember what he was tweeting that in reference to, but he was certainly
something about the character not being as two sided as Figgins or something.
Yeah,
or
certainly he didn't have much on Community. He played he plays Abed's father.
Yeah.
On Community, and he's not in that many episodes, but what he is given, Community is, even weirder show than Glee, but, the writing is slightly braver, is one of the words I'd probably use. It can be as absurd as it wants to be, but it's within the context of the show, and the characterization and the writing is very unusual and brave. He hasn't had much on Community, but I remember him always tweeting him tweeting at this time about the way that the writers on Community treated his character, and even though it was only small, that they always made an effort to make it, not a one note thing, that, he got the chance to play a lot of depth into every line that he had or every scene that he had, and that he felt like he knew more about that, that character and who he was.
Versus Glee,
Know what I mean. And I always think that there could be a lot to Figgins if they gave Iqbal Thiba the work, if you know what I mean, but they haven't, and so I'm always confused about whether he's very compassionate or very stupid or all of that kind of thing. So, I don't know. Caitlin, do you have any opinions on Figgins, I suppose, in this episode and in general?
I mean, I have a hard time thinking he's just stupid, because his expression in that pause before he actually reads the name is really oh my God.
He's angry.
So he's not just going, I guess I should read the name.
Yeah,
kind of thing. He's like kind of,
like he thought before he spoke or something.
He sees it and he hesitates and he looks visibly upset at it, and then he reads it. So I'm like, why would you do that? I don't know that I would have made something up, but I probably would have read it, closed it, and been like, prom's done, y'all don't get anything for the rest of the year, prom next year is canceled, or whatever. I would have shut that shit down. That's not okay. So I don't know what is going through his head that made him think that he should read that, because he does visibly look upset by the name being there, and then he goes ahead with it anyway.
Yeah, it is. That's what I thought. He sounds furious. He's just you little fuckers. What he says it, if you know what I mean. So I don't know why you would say it. Yeah, I don't know. His choices were questionable, but I do think that there is a bit to Figgins that, would have been interesting to see more of in general. Moving on from that, obviously, a big part of that is, all of these people having crying fits, most importantly Kurt, but also Quinn and Santana. So I'll just go to the girls first, because the boys' sort of ending part is a bit more significant. But, yeah, so Quinn runs out and has a crying fit because she didn't win prom queen. And even though one of them clearly probably did, because they were nominated, if you know what I mean. If people had been doing it correctly, and not, aiming to screw over Kurt. I don't know why these girls are taking it personally, but apparently this is very important. So we have Quinn and Rachel having their, deep and meaningful after Quinn slaps Rachel because of Jesse and Finn having a, punch-up on the dance floor, which, I don't know why Finn thought that was, okay, because he couldn't handle the idea of, Rachel enjoying another man's company, so there's probably a bit of a, problem there. But, Rachel and Quinn's sort of big, deep and meaningful slap conversation. Jack, what did you think of this one, and, why is this stuff so important to Quinn, and why is she so delusional that she, has more going on than just being prom queen?
Well, I've always liked Quinn. A lot of her character is always about wanting to get out of Lima and worried that she'll have nothing once, high school is finished. So I appreciate whenever we get any of that, because I think that's a really interesting, character trait, just in general. And with this actual slap, I would have liked if there was a bit more, backlash, if she did slap her, and then it's not like the second after she's like, I'm so sorry. Like, if they slap her, she's like yelling at Rachel still, and then maybe a few scenes down the line they resolve things. But other than that, I still like it, because Quinn and Rachel are one of my favorite friendships in the show, so I like seeing anything, and I like how this is almost like the start of like their friendship going better. So
I think that her reaction to the slap is pretty realistic. I think that there are sort of two types of people. People who can slap people and be okay with it, and people who can slap people and not be okay with it. And clearly Quinn is the second type, if you know what I mean. Like, that she, you know, she lashed out clearly beyond her own control, and then that snapped her back into, you know, how crazy she was being. Whereas other people could slap someone and, you know, carry on and not actually feel like it was a problem that they needed to haul themselves back from.
Yeah, well, Quinn's like a different kind of mean. Like, she uses her words very well and is very manipulative. However, but yeah, compared to like Santana, who will get into fights a lot, but Quinn's not necessarily that much of a violent person. So I agree with what you're saying.
Yeah. And then, yeah, so Caitlin, did you sort of have any feelings about Quinn's, like, you know, worry that she's no longer going to be pretty or whatever? Like, I don't know why she's so hung up on this, or why she thinks she isn't, you know, capable of other things, but she does get really stuck on it.
I just, both Quinn and Santana, my eye rolls were so massive. Like, I understand being upset because this was something you were going for, but this is not the time or the place to be obsessing about your own issues when clearly your friend is in so much more pain than you are because the entire school just humiliated him. And this has nothing to do with you. Get over yourself. And that's both for Santana and Quinn. So I just, like, why do these scenes need to exist? Because I just found them really off-putting.
Repressed or whatever. She's like, you know, why can't everyone just like me? And I actually think that this scene served for, you know, some pretty good stuff from Brittany, who surprisingly, like, was one of my MVPs of the episode, both in this bit and, like, her sort of plot with Artie. And towards season two, in the second episode we watched as well, I also really liked Brittany, and I usually really don't, so, you know, props to them for that. But, you know, Brittany is just like, shut up, you need to go back in there and be there for Kurt. So I liked that part of the Santana conversation. But I seriously, I mean, I don't think her breakdown was because she wasn't prom queen. I think it was like a breakdown because she's like, you know, pretending to date a gay guy and is emotionally fucked up. But, yeah, they were kind of pointless and, you know, a bit indulgent. Obviously, Kurt is having the most, you know, trauma slash issues here, where he goes out into the hallway and, you know, has his little rant about, you know, how they were, you know, just because, you know, the bullying stopped to his face didn't mean that they weren't all, you know, secretly hating him and putting that much effort into hating him.
How much would that hurt, though? Just, like, you thinking that the whole school, like, is fine with you now after being kicked out and then having this happen. It was just, I really felt his pain in that part.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I agree.
Because he had so much hope, like, even in his voice. Like, he was so hopeful, and it just, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I also didn't kind of, like, where were these people? Who was doing it?
Yeah.
Like, it's not that I don't believe what happened, but, like, who was responsible? Because I just don't understand how, like, or why it happened. If, like, Karofsky and Azemia were the worst, or at least Karofsky was the worst to him, then who was doing this? But, so they have that conversation, and, you know, Kurt, you know, about, like, running away, and, you know, if he leaves, then he'll have, like, a lump in his throat too, like Blaine, and I don't know, I didn't know about that, like, that bit, but,
You know what I find interesting about that part? Is that Kurt is including Blaine in this, and we were stupid, we thought, but Blaine the whole time has been very wary of basically this exact thing. So Kurt is being like, we thought this, and Blaine's kind of like, actually, no, that was just you. But he's very sweet and kind of just looking at him like very understanding, but no, Kurt, it was just you. Blaine was terrified of something just like this happening.
Yeah, like, he's so supportive. he is just kind of sitting there going, like, he's not going, I told you so, or anything, and because he's not that kind of person, but he is certainly sitting there just being there for him and not really contributing because he was, you know, because he doesn't want to say, I told you so, basically, you know? He's just sort of sitting there going, like, yeah, well, yeah, this happened. And even when Kurt's like, even when he's like, should we leave? And Kurt tries to make it about Blaine as well, like, which I don't know whether that's a good or a bad thing, but he tries to make it about Blaine, like, you know, we did this so you wouldn't have a lump in your throat. It's like, Blaine doesn't even know these people. He just doesn't want to be harassed. Like,
Yeah. Like
how about you don't make this about, like, you know, Blaine facing up to his pain, because he was okay with not, if you know what I mean. And I don't know, it was just like I love the way that Blaine supports Kurt, but God knows that the way that they handle each other is not really,
not what they need.
It's not really on the same page, like, the way that they handle each other, honestly. But I don't know. Caitlin, your point is very good, like, that he does certainly, like, you know, we thought this was going to be okay, and it was just like, no, we didn't. But I didn't. So now we're here, and I'm not going to be a dick to you about it, but yeah. But he's still willing to go along with whatever Kurt wants, and then, you know, Kurt, I don't know, what did you think, Caitlin, of his kind of, I guess his decision, or his, not his decision to go back in, because I think that was quite strong and, you know, the right thing to do, even though it wouldn't have been a terrible thing if he didn't.
I still get so proud of Kurt at that part, like, even watching it for the 20th time, I still get so proud when he decides to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the fact he says, like, can, doing this was about, like, you not having a lump in your throat anymore, or whatever, if we leave, all that will happen is I'll have a lump too, and, you know, I get that, but, like, you know, think of how much more, like, triply stressed Blaine would be now that this has happened, if you know what I mean, about going back. I don't know, what did you think of sort of Kurt putting it like that, I guess, like that he was kind of saying, well, now I'm going to be stuck with the same problem you have if I make the same decision you made, if you know what I mean.
I hadn't really thought about it like that, but when you put it like that, it really sounds like he's minimizing Blaine's past trauma, which is kind of...
Or criticizing his, like, criticizing the way Blaine handled it, I think, and I didn't love that.
Which is, he knows, is Blaine's biggest regret, because he told him that the first day they met. So, like, yeah, that's, I hadn't really thought about it like that, but now that you say it, that is a bit problematic. Yeah.
I think that, yeah, it sort of, yeah, it took me a second to put it into the right words, but I think it feels like that he is criticizing Blaine's past choices.
And he might not even be doing it consciously.
No, not at all.
But... Yeah, because I don't think he's going, God, Blaine, you suck. God,
you were such a wimp, Blaine. I can't be like you.
You know? That's why you're the trophy boyfriend, not the real character.
Oh, my God. Anyway, so he goes back in, which, regardless of Blaine's feelings, is really great. And he goes in and he gets his crown and he kind of sasses everyone and they all clap, probably because Figgins yelled at them and told them to.
That's the only way I can believe them clapping at the end.
Kurt Hummel, like, he is a prince and you better not say, put one single foot wrong with him for the rest of the year or you'll all be expelled. And that's probably what Figgins did.
It's like the howler, Mrs. Weasley's howler. You put one foot out and you're straight home.
Yeah. And then he goes off to have, his alleged first dance with Karofsky, and then sort of Karofsky backs out of it. You know, they're standing there, and then he sort of can't do it.
I'm surprised that Karofsky even went up there in the first place.
He didn't back away till Kurt started bugging him to come out again.
Yeah, that's true.
So, I don't know, do you think Kurt had just shut his mouth? Do you think Karofsky would have sort of gone along with it and, like, sort of supported him as much as he could by, like, doing the dance or whatever, or do you think he would have backed down anyway?
I like to think he would, especially with what we were saying earlier about how he has this, like, protective nature over Kurt. I would really have liked that.
Yeah, I think what Kurt says makes them dancing being an act of coming out, whereas if he hadn't said anything, he could just be like, I was just supporting him, like a decent human being, whereas Kurt saying, time to come out, David. He's going, okay, if you dance with me, you are coming out of the closet. And he's like, okay, peace out.
Because maybe, maybe like Karofsky would have been more like how if like that it's how Santana is like a lesbian, but it's like unspoken that a lot of people sort of know. Maybe Karofsky was sort of just like wanting to just sort of do this, and like it's more like addressing it that is just getting like getting to him. Whereas like if he was, he might have been fine dancing with Kurt, not fine with people knowing that he was gay, but sort of just don't even speak about it. This is what's happening. Just no one say it. But the moment you say it, it gets a whole lot worse. If that makes sense, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not blaming Kurt for wanting, you know, Karofsky to be out exactly, but I do think he scared him off. Like, in that moment, I think that he, I think he probably would have done it if Kurt hadn't, like, done the dance as an act of support, if Kurt hadn't made it about that at that moment. If they just made it about supporting Kurt as opposed to it being, like, a statement of Karofsky's own, if you know what I mean. I don't know. I don't know how he would have come out, like, just being like, yeah, everyone, I'm gay too, and I'm going to dance with this kid who's not my gay boyfriend.
And, like, yell over ABBA.
Yeah.
Maybe, like, just because ABBA was playing, and that's very gay, Kurt thought it would be appropriate.
I don't even know how that works. Anyway, obviously, Kurt is left there stranded, and then Blaine steps in to give him his dance, which is all very nice and noble. This is another thing as well, like, Blaine came to the prom, and there was no issue with that, but, like, earlier in the episode, you see this everyone else slow dancing, and they're kind of standing there side by side going, so, nice dance. It's like there's some issue about slow dancing compared to, like, if they were dancing to the other song, like, they were dancing to, you know, Friday or whatever, so what's the difference between dancing to Friday and dancing to Jar of Hearts? Can someone tell me?
I'm just showing more acts of intimacy, I guess.
Yeah.
I suppose.
But I suppose, like,
oh,
now...
okay, that... yeah.
But I suppose, like, now at this part, like, they're just on such a, like, a high of, like, being out and proud that they're like, you know, they just do it then. At that moment, like, when I first watched it, for some reason, I don't even know why I thought this at the time, I really, really wanted Rachel to be the one that stepped out and started dancing with Kurt, and I can't even, like, tell you why
because Rachel and Kurt are more in love than any other, like, not sexually, they're a better relationship for, like, long-term life partners than most other people in this show.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
And yeah, it would have been really beautiful to be Rachel, honestly. I mean, it's great that it's Blaine, because for what it means for Blaine and exposing himself and all of that, even though none of these people know who he is, but, or why he was singing. But yeah, I don't know, man. It is a nice moment. So yeah, Caitlin, I know that you were going to talk about that later, possibly, but did you have sort of any thoughts on the why or what that meant?
And I think what gets me especially about that scene is how there's a moment, like, right before Blaine says anything, he's got his hand out and, like, he swallows, so you can tell that he looks terrified of what he's doing, but he does it anyway. He pushes through it for Kurt's sake, and I think it's just this really powerful, subtle little thing that shows the struggle that he's going through, and I think that just makes it even better.
With you, there was a lot in this time, in this pre-season 3, you know, Blaine trophy boyfriend time, where, you know, all that people really had to go off about Blaine's characterization was, like, the, you know, the small actions that Darren Criss chose to put into the character, or was directed to put into the character, possibly chose, because I don't think they were putting that much effort into the character until they decided to make him a regular, if you know what I mean. And there are so many things that actors do to, you know, just feed the image of a character, which isn't necessarily directed. But I really liked him in this episode, and I felt sorry for him the whole time. I felt sorry for Kurt as well, but I don't know, man. They're certainly not the best match, and I think that their ways of handling things do start to come across pretty clearly in this episode, like that they're not the best match, which is interesting, because I'm not sure if you meant to take it like that or not. Like, again, like, the all of the issues that I see arising in this episode, I don't know if we were meant to take them as issues, if you know what I mean. And this is something I never know about Clayne. Are we meant to be thinking they're the most dysfunctional relationship in the world, or are we meant to be thinking this is adorable? Not that the dance isn't adorable, but, you know, everything else. I never will understand this, probably. The last little aspect is the fact that Artie has a plotline and it's pointless. But, yeah, about spiking the punch because he's not going out with Brittany. And Sue threatens to pull his teeth out, which is, like, whatever. But this all happened because Brittany, you know, he tried to ask Brittany out to prom and, you know, ask for her forgiveness for breaking up with her and calling her an idiot and stuff, or stupid, or whatever it was that demeaned her. And she was just like, that was a really nice prom proposal, but no, I'm still not cool with what you did. Which I really enjoyed. I really enjoyed the number. I really enjoy everyone, like, clapping along in their home ec class. And then I really enjoyed that she shoved it in his face. So, yeah.
But, hey, Stevie Wonder. Stevie Wonder is my is one of my favorite artists. So whenever there's...
It is about a baby!
I know, but it's...
about a baby. I was just like, what? Like, I was so glad when they said that. Like, because when I first saw the track listing, I'm like, that song's about a baby. And then she said that and I died. So,
she's gonna say, this is perfect. And she knows everything.
I love that whole scene, like, a lot, and I love that she rejects him, because, just Brittany was a really solid character in this episode, and I don't understand why they didn't, like, make her like that all of the time.
Brittany and Artie, like, I really actually like their breakup, not because I won't ever, like, I mean, their relationship, I was, like, indifferent to it, but I don't like Santana's role in it, how she convinces Brittany that it's not cheating because the plumbing is different or whatever. But I kind of like how the way they break up is the fact that everyone else in that school had called her stupid. Even Santana probably. But Artie was the only one that wasn't. And then he did. And that's what sort of pushed her over the edge. I thought that was a bit different. And I liked that.
Yeah. No, I really like the handling of that. And yeah, I don't understand why they don't have her be that sort of, you know, real. Like, she felt real, like, in this, and she barely ever does, and I really liked it, and it's certainly better than the other prom episode involving her, which I literally never want to talk about again. So...
Dinosaur.
Yeah, Promosaurus. So let's go through the favourite moments and quotes, and then move on to the New York episode. Yeah, do you want to just go down the list?
Sure. So my favorite moment, as we have already said, was Blaine asking Kurt to dance after Kurofsky abandons him, because it's a really sweet moment, and Blaine sucks up how terrified he is to do something for the person that he really cares about.
It is very nice, and it's, you know, for all that they're bad at handling each other, I'm not going to say that Kurt didn't deserve that support in that moment or anything like that. Jack, how about you?
I'm going to preface my moment with a little story. Before we started the flashbacks episode, like, I don't think I'd rewatched the first few seasons in about a year. And so before, like, when I was just, like, I just have Glee on, like, all the time, just, like, watching it and stuff, this moment was the moment where I would tear up every time, because every other moment you kind of get a bit, like, immune to it or whatever. But it's all sad, but, you know. This moment, like, when Mercedes is sitting down and Rachel's singing Jar of Hearts, and then Sam walks over to her and asks tells her that she looks very beautiful tonight and asks, will she have this dance? My God, tears everywhere. It's so good. And my first thought is, oh, poor Mercedes. She's probably watching everyone really sad. This is what she was talking about to Rachel before. She doesn't have anybody. And then Sam, being the perfect Prince Charming that he is, walks up to her and asks her if she'd like this dance. And tears everywhere. It's so good. I love it so, so much. And Mercedes is my bae, and Sam Sadies is life.
Oh, my God. Okay, that was very dramatic.
Do we expect any less?
No. Fair enough. Very, I'm happy for you that you had this moment, you know, of wonderfulness. Yeah, mine was actually earlier in the episode. I did like a lot of aspects and pretty much everything with Jesse. But I really liked the bit where Kurt, like, as much as I didn't like the way that Kurt asked Blaine to prom, I liked the aftermath scene with him kind of talking about it to the girlfriends, like, to all of the girls, and the trying on of the prom dresses, and just how supportive everyone was of each other, like, that they were all going together, like, you know, you know, Lauren and Tina and Santana, like, you know, they're all, like, relatively competitive, but they weren't being horrible to each other, even if, you know, Santana does manage to get jibes in private. They're all really good to each other in this, and it really surprised me for some reason. And Kurt, really supportive of just, you know, being everyone's, like, fashion guru, and especially when he was judging Santana and was like, go with God, Satan. That gets said in my house a lot. So, yeah, I really liked that. But, yeah, if we go down the quotes as well, yeah.
So mine was Jesse telling Rachel about coming back and what he did to her. And he said, I traded love for a fourth consecutive national championship. It was a bum deal. For a first, maybe, but for a fourth, no way.
He's so serious. He takes himself so seriously. He's so obsessed with it. Oh, he's the worst, but I love him. He's so genuine in his, like, he does things that are totally ridiculous, but they're totally real to him, and I just can't. And it's ridiculous.
I predicted that would be your quote, Caitlin, and I'm glad I got it right.
Oh god. Go on.
Yeah. Okay, so my quote is Sue. It's one of her rants. She goes, "No, it's when Figgins and Will and her are in the office talking
they
about
the prom music.
Yeah, Glee Club doing the music, and Sue goes, fine. Well." Then let me take this opportunity to make a request. William, I have in my Spanx at all times a list of the worst songs ever performed by the Glee Club, and I would appreciate it if you would not reprise any of the following numbers. Number one, Run Joey Run. You should literally apologize to America for that one. Number two, the ingenious mashup of Crazy in Love and Tear. Now, I know you must have been pretty tired when you put that baby together. And I really like this because then it comes back in your quote, Natalie, with how Rachel, like, addresses it again. But I like how, like, at this part, like, it's a very, like, tasteful, like, humor of, like, fourth wall breaking that Glee kind of doesn't do well in, like, in later seasons. So I loved this part.
Seriously, originally I wrote down a portion of that one, that just the you should literally apologize to America for that one, because it's true. Basically later on in the Glee Club when they announce when Will announces that they're doing the prom music, Rachel immediately, she's like, let's do Run Joey Run. And it just kills me.
And
because
everyone looks at her like, what?
Lea Michele has a very strange and dry sense of humor. And sometimes she gets to do, actually, she gets to do it a lot with Jonathan Groff. Like her with Rachel, Rachel and Jesse, she gets to do a lot of the kind of humor that she does best, which is like over the top, taking herself too seriously. It's very, like, old school, Broadway, honestly. It's very old school movie musical and very old school, like, straight faced sort of over the top stuff. And it's really, really funny when she gets to do it. This was a great moment of that. But mine was my actual quote was another moment of Rachel's right before she sees Jesse, when she goes, members of the people are painting the prom, you know, background on stage, and for once they actually acknowledge the other students in the school, because she goes, members of the audiovisual club, I might possibly sing this song at prom, and when I'm done rehearsing, I'd like your feedback. Tell me whether I was brilliant or simply outstanding. And they all kind of look at her like,
I wrote that one down.
I just imagine her going around the school, like, talking to people like this. Like, what? I want an episode of this freaking show where someone who we've never seen before gives their outside opinion on Rachel and her bizarre behaviour, and like what it's been like watching her around that school for 4 years, because it's insane. And I just love it. So, yeah, I just like to imagine her talking to people, like, or singing in front of random people, and how they all feel about it. But the actual song list for the episode, that was the first number, Rolling in the Deep. And then Isn't She Lovely, which was Artie's prom proposal song to Britney, and then the rest of the songs were performance numbers at the prom, which was Friday, which I'd totally forgotten about, Jar of Hearts, I'm Not Going to Teach Your Boyfriend How to Dance with You, which was Blaine, and then Dancing Queen, which was the final, first dance of the King and Queen. So does anyone have any thoughts on any particular numbers from this episode, like either the performance or like what they meant or anything like that?
Friday, because Friday was good, and back when, like, season 2 and season 3 on, this is going to sound weird, I don't think I've mentioned this before, but Sam and Puck were my biggest crack ship in the world, like, never going to happen, and don't even ask me why, like, I think it's just, like, I just like their friendship, and the actors are really good friends, but, like, I was, like, a biggest crack ship on Sam and Puck, so seeing them sing Friday together, it was good, and just as a number, like, as a song, they make that song really, really fucking great. And, like, every now and then on a Friday, I will turn this on when I drive to work and I will sing it.
I really like the Friday. I always like the Friday number as well because it is stupid. Let's not lie. It is stupid. But they do rock the hell out of it. And there is no way that any junior prom in 2010 didn't have this song played. It's really realistic. Like, it's really of that moment. Yes. Friday was an unfortunate moment for the world, but there is no way that, like, any DJ, you know, playing songs to 16-year-olds in 2010 or whatever, didn't play this song at prom or at a school dance or something like that. 100% they would have, and I just love that, so...
And Glee has done every song, every crazy song, because every year there seems to be one song that's just freaking crazy, and yeah, like that. Okay, they did Friday. They did Call Me Maybe. They did Fox, Gangnam Style. Yeah, you know, they just do that.
Yeah, I mean, Call Me Maybe was massive, but I think it was more of a legit pop song than Friday and Gangnam Style and the freaking Fox song.
So. Everyone expected them to do Call Me Maybe to the point where they even, like, addressed it in the show. They're like, let's just get this out of the way.
Who knows? Like, that's true. God, I don't know what it'll be for season 6. What do you reckon?
I don't know, is there really, like, a big song that's, like, I don't know.
Have you heard that Albatross song?
Albatross. Like, the Fleetwood Mac song?
No. Okay. I'm glad I only learned about this in the last couple of days. It's a it's a weird song that has gone, like, to number 2 in the charts, and it's viral. But it's not even called Albatross. It's called, like, Albatross or something.
I would recognize it because we play, like, the main pop
it's
radio
at
work.
It's so weird, but I haven't heard anything about Glee doing it, so keep your fingers
crossed. Well, Glee should do Blank Space because that song is my jam and the only song I like on the radio.
Oh, my God. No, I would die, but I can't even imagine who would do it properly on Glee because that song has to be done... It has to be done ironically. Like, it has to be done in the way that Taylor does it, which is it's a mockery of herself, or a mockery of the people, you know, who casting judgment on her. And so I'm trying to think how that would work in the context of the show, or who should do it. I don't know. I'll get back to you. Anyway, I always really liked the Friday number. I think Rolling in the Deep gave me, like, chills this time, but it might be because I have, like, severe sunburn and aloe vera gel, like, like chilling up my legs, but so it might have been that, but I really liked Rolling in the Deep, and I'm obsessed with Blaine doing Not Gonna Teach Your Boyfriend How to Dance With You, because I love that song. He sounds a little bit, like, auto-tuned and ridiculous, but I love his performance of it. I like the original of it. I like the Kate Nash version. I like the weird pronouns of this entire song. I just like this song.
Who's the original by?
The band's called Black Kids, and the original is a male singer singing the lyrics, yeah, you are the girl that I've been dreaming of ever since I was a little girl, which doesn't make a great amount of sense, except for all he said about it is just that it's like, just like the, you know, the, I don't know what the correct word for that is, the, not euphemism, but the... You know, the common turn of phrase, like, oh, I've wanted something ever since I was a little girl, if you know what I mean. Like, they're just kind of using that. And then Kate Nash did a cover of it, which made it very queer, I suppose. And then, I don't know, I just liked this performance in general. I think it's fun. And I've done this song at karaoke, and it was fun as well. Caitlin, how about you?
Oh, Rolling in the Deep is so good.
Yeah.
I love that so much. Jesse and Rachel just sound so good together. They just, they're incredible, and I love it. And I have so many St. Barry feelings when they're together.
I just love how they're, like, they don't, like, you know, any other two sensible people would just be like, what the hell are you doing here? But because they're both so serious about their art.
They have to finish their song.
True.
And then they have the conversation.
You wouldn't believe it of anyone except them, but of them you totally believe it, and it's amazing. cool. All right, any thoughts on this one before we go on to New York? Just any final thoughts on the prom episode?
It was a pretty good episode, I think. Just as an episode, I thought it was a good one. Yeah.
Caitlin?
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Yeah. Cool. So the final episode that we're doing for flashbacks is the finale, New York, which we skipped the episode funeral. So what you missed there was that Jesse gets hired to help New Directions as a consultant. Finn and Quinn end up breaking up. Rachel and Jesse might get together again. Finn's clearly also wanting to get back together with Rachel. Will is dumping the kids for April's crappy Broadway show. And Sue's sister dies, and the Glee Club, you know, helps out with her funeral. And we don't see more of Sue in that episode, in this season, aside from there. But, the main part of this episode, obviously, is the kids finally get to go to New York for nationals, Glee Club National Championships. And the first scene we see them is, you know, they're all sitting there in Times Square eating takeaway food. And we find out that they're doing original songs for nationals and that they haven't written the original songs. So why are they so ill-prepared is what I want to know.
Because Will Schuster is their teacher.
Yeah, like, why are the songs not written? Like, why are they doing original songs that, you know, might be bad? Like, why is Will Schuster expecting them to write, like, really good songs in one afternoon? Like, oh, you better have two verses. Like, who's recording the music? How is the Nationals band going to know how to play these songs? Like, these are the questions. I don't understand why anyone thought this was a good idea. But the main point is we see, like, the kids actually later on being like, so are you going to stay and help us? And Will is like, I can't. I have to go do things that would make me dumping you deadweight children and following my own dreams.
F you guys.
So it's not the most appropriate moment for him to be kind of caught up in his own head. But in general, yeah, Jack, what did you think of them coming to New York without having written and had these songs, like, down for nationals?
I don't know why they couldn't just, like, mention every episode, like, from regionals to now, that, like, they've been working on songs. Like, it just takes one sentence, and then we wouldn't be having this discussion right now. Like, one sentence each episode, like, literally 2 seconds of the episode to say, yeah, I've been doing good on that song. How have you been going? Yeah, I've been going great. Awesome. So, yeah, let's continue with the episode. And if that happened each episode, so we actually know they've been working hard on something, we would not be having this discussion right now. So it's just a bit like, come on, guys. You could have done it better.
Caitlin, how about you? How do you feel about their attempt at nationals preparation?
This is pretty much how they operate, so not surprised, but it's really stupid.
Yeah.
It's different to, like, performing a song, like, rehearsing a song the day before, but you're literally writing a new song the day before. Like, if, for example, had only learnt, I don't know, like, Paradise by the Dashboard Light, like, one, like, it's from season 3, like, one episode before that, okay.
They could have gone, but, like, they're a karaoke recording,
yeah,
for it,
like,
and practice.
Performing a song that they already know, as opposed to, like, writing a whole new song.
Yeah.
I also don't know, like, who expects these kids to be, like, good enough songwriters to compete
Will does.
With songs by, like, professional artists, if you know what I mean. Like, it's like, is this meant to be endearing or something?
Well, Will thinks April Rhodes' show is good, so.
Yeah, so let's talk about that quickly, because, yeah, how about that? I know that, Caitlin, you said in, you know, the past episodes where, you know, Will was, I think, in Rumours especially, where he's talking about, you know, he loves the kids and he wants to go so badly that you didn't begrudge him having these dreams and stuff like that, and wanting to pursue his own stuff. How do you think of how he handled that in this episode with his kind of, you know, wandering off to go do that?
Well, I still don't begrudge him the dream. He handles it piss poorly. Like,
not the moment.
Compartmentalize, like, deal with nationals and then deal with Broadway. Like, it's fine to do one thing at a time. It's okay.
Yeah.
And it's more appropriate.
Maybe he couldn't afford, like, more than 2 days at that hotel. Like, I don't know why that they stayed at such an expensive hotel. They could have got, like, 5 rooms somewhere else much cheaper. But anyway, yeah, so basically his behavior is he's super distracted, and this episode also, you know, offers him, Will, Matthew Morrison, the opportunity to, like, sing his own song off his own stupid album on a Broadway stage.
So shit.
Whatever. It's so self-indulgent, which is whatever.
Song isn't even good. It's auto-tuned like heck.
And then some dude, who I assume is, like, the director of April's show, or maybe a security guard, who knows, says that, you know, he's got it, he's got the talent, and, you know, that inspires him even more, so, whatever at that. I think he makes terrible choices, and he should have booked to stay on, like, a further weekend. If April is, like, staying in New York, he can stay on her couch, or probably in her bed, and he can just stay there after Nationals finishes, and then go do his, like, you know, chasing the dream and seeing him if he wants to be on Broadway. But he's so distracted, and it literally lets the kids down, and it's, like, ridiculous. And if they'd had these songs prepared in advance, the kids could have been experiencing New York in the way that, you know, that they, you know, could have actually enjoyed themselves. But they sort of, you know, go against his wishes and decide to go and look at New York anyway by, like, running around writing a song, I guess, or pretending to write a song, or being inspired by New York, you know, going in and looking at things. So this was the opportunity that the show got to use, you know, a lot of the on-location stuff, you know, that they went to New York and actually filmed, you know, Central Park, Lincoln Center, Washington Square Park, all sorts of places. So, yeah, this is the first time we see proper on-location stuff in New York. Did you guys like this, like, seeing this kind of thing, like the on-location? What were your favorite parts of seeing them in New York for the first time, I suppose? Jack?
This leads into, like, some of my favorite moments and stuff, but I liked, I mean, because I've never been to New York, and I only recognize things from, like, movies and shows, but it was cool to see Glee, like, in those places I recognize. I mean, it might be different for you two if you've both been to New York, but, yeah, I mean, it's funny, if you look closely, you can see, like, people behind, like the gates, like, on watching. Yeah.
I can't say I've ever noticed that, but, like,
yeah,
probably.
But I and the song is really good as well, but I think it's a bit funny how Quinn's like, the New York will write it for us. I'm like, yeah, we'll give you inspiration, but you still have to write the damn
not
song.
Write the freaking song, Quinn.
Yeah.
They could have probably more easily found, like, some, like, penniless songwriter who was, like, desperate to, like, you know, sell their work and get some unknown song of them. That probably would have been, like, more feasible.
Yeah, the hobo that Rachel bought the tickets off of.
As if Rachel didn't know when Cats called.
I know.
I wrote that down!
I know.
Like, come on. And, but yeah, Caitlin, how about you, like, seeing them in New York for the first time, I suppose?
I liked it. It was fun to see something just different from the same place that we've become accustomed to, and seeing them just with this joy of exploring the world in a way they've never been able to before. It was fun, I guess, is the best way to say it. Just, it was pure fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something I wanted to mention as well was, I don't know if you guys are familiar with the But It's Glee gif, or the way that people react in Glee fandom, like, whenever anything is super ridiculous, a lot of people react with the But It's Glee gif, which is Zach Woodley, their former choreography, just being like, But It's Glee, ... which went on, like, to be, like, so, you know, that originated with this episode. And let me tell you the story as to why, in case you people don't know. In that New York mashup number, when they're going around the fountain at Lincoln Center, and then there's a bit later on where Artie is on, like, where the whole group, they're running around the outside of the fountain, including Artie wheeling himself around there, and just this interview.
Oh, I've seen this. Day, yeah, yep.
Around the finale, Zach Woodley, like, clearly he just, like, had it, or he was, like, I don't know, drunk that day, or just didn't care about throwing shade or something, because they were just, you know, he was, like, looking back over the tapes or something like that. He was like, looking back, we kind of looked at it and went, you know, well, but how would have Artie got up onto the fountain to drive himself around? And then he was just like, but it's Glee, so we'll just say he sang himself up there or something. And I just died, because his face, he wasn't taking it seriously. He was just like eye rolling. He was just like, whatever, I don't care. Which is why I love him and the But It's Glee gif. So yes, good old Glee, you know, Glee fan of a throwback in this episode.
So you said that he was former choreographer. So is he not the choreographer anymore?
He wasn't for season 5.
Oh, I didn't know that. Released. Okay.
He did leave for a while. He might have returned for season 6.
Oh.
He's a good dude. I don't know what's going on with him, but I always liked his contribution to all the behind-the-scenes stuff with Glee.
On the Glee project as well, he seemed like a really cool guy.
Yeah, I really like Zach Woodley, so yeah, I don't know what... And he was friends with a lot of the cast, so I don't know exactly what is his situation, but he may be... I've heard rumblings. He may be around still. Let's go into a few of the, you know, other, you know, parts of the New York experience, which is, I guess, the, you know, boys and girls trying to write their songs separately, and eventually, you know, Finn, the other boys convince Finn to just go after Rachel and take her out on a big, you know, romance movie date. And so they have their date in New York City. You know, very, you know, nothing happens between them, but they both know that it's this big deal and stuff like that. So I got very emotional at this part. But Jack, do you want to kind of talk about just what you thought about this moment for the show and I guess their relationship?
It was really, really hard to watch because when, like, I don't know if, like, you guys remember, but when, like, in season 5, when Rachel's singing Yesterday by the Beatles, she walks on that, is it the Brooklyn, was that bridge called?
The Bow Bridge?
Yeah.
In Central Park, yeah.
Yeah, she's walking across there and the bubbles fly across. Well, that happens in this episode of Glee. And then in season 5, when she's singing Yesterday by the Beatles, she's walking in New York, there's bubbles flying across, so it's very similar, the same, like, shots and stuff. And then she's on the bridge looking at her phone of, like, a photo of the Glee Club from the first 13 episodes or from season 1. So that was really hard rewatching this episode and seeing that. And then obviously we know what happens like in the show later on. And yeah, it was very emotional for that reason and for obvious financial reasons, but yeah.
Yeah. I just found watching Finn throughout this scene, like pretty difficult in that he was just very like, it was kind of him at his best, like just very innocent and hopeful, and that slight amount of cockiness that sort of is really, really good with him. And I don't know, I liked it a lot, and it was very sweet and very thoughtful. You know, he thought out something that would mean a lot to her, and I just, yeah, it was nice.
It was a little harder for me to watch Corey in the Born This Way episode when he was singing I've Got to Be Me with Mike, because he was just so happy and so proud of himself. That was hard.
Oh, good times. I had a bit of a rough time in this episode, both about Corey and then about the Rachel and Kurt stuff, which I'd forgotten how much wrecked me, which we will go into in a second. But yeah, Caitlin, yeah, how did you feel, I suppose, about Finn and Rachel getting back together at this time, or, you know, how they're pursuing their relationship?
And this upset me too, obviously, for remembering Yesterday from season 5 too. And Finn is very comfortable in his skin because he knows exactly what he wants and he's doing everything right to go after it. So it's just, like you said, he's at his best at this point, and it's very heartbreaking seeing that in hindsight. And it's really lovely, and they have this really lovely moment, but it's maybe not the best time for...
Yeah.
But it's very lovely for their relationship in terms of what they're supposed to be doing. Maybe not the best.
Yeah. Obviously, Rachel does make that choice to kind of not get into it because she needs to focus on stuff. I also really like the, you know, the moment, obviously, with Patti LuPone and what she says to Rachel, and that's, like, obviously scripted and stuff. This isn't real people. I mean, it's really Patti LuPone. But it's really nice to think of someone like that saying things like that to someone like Rachel, as opposed to being like, yeah, bye, if you know what I mean. Just being quite, you know, genuine and inspiring to someone, and that was really nice, their interaction as well.
And I love her, Rachel's little one. Like, if she doesn't do it for her, at least do it for Kurt. Because I've always liked the idea how Kurt looks to Patti LuPone as Rachel looks to Barbara Streisand. I like that.
Yeah,
and that's another point. If this freaking show ends without Rachel meeting Barbara Streisand, I'm gonna throw something, because I've wanted that this whole time. And even though she goes off Funny Girl and all that, I still need it to happen in some way. Like, if Barbara Streisand comes to Ohio and convinces her
back to Funny Girl.
Yeah, exactly. I want that.
But it's Glee. It could happen.
I mean, Barbara Streisand, because, like, it's a mall in Ohio. Barbara Streisand won't be here, but she might.
You never know. Jesus Christ. So, yeah. Quinn is freaking out at this point. She has a really weird small plot of being super destructive because Finn broke up with her, and she was like, I don't care if we lose. I'm going to tell on us and screw everyone over. And then the girls, you know, the other girls convince her not to be crazy by cutting her hair. And I don't know what the point of that scene was, except to show that Quinn is not okay with everything that's going on. It just seemed very easily solved, which I was a little bit, you know, confused by.
But it was funny how she was... Like, oh, sorry, go on.
Oh, God, no, what were you
going to
say?
I think it's funny. I thought it was funny how Quinn was like, I don't care about some stupid show choir competition, because you listen to how she talks. She freaking loves the Glee Club. She's like, I like being here, like, in rumors. She's like, I like being here, but relationship comes first. And even in this episode, she's just like, damn it, then we can't get Rachel and Cody expelled because we'll lose at nationals. Like, she cares. She's just lying to herself.
Well, I don't know. I feel like, did this plot have, like, some scenes that were cut from it or something? Because it seemed to, like, go really strangely and quickly. I don't know.
Well, I remember reading a lot about how a lot of people were disappointed with Quinn in this episode because, like, in the previous episode, she's like, oh, I can't quit the Glee Club because it'll ruin my big plans for nationals. And what she does, she gets a freaking haircut. She doesn't do anything.
I don't know. Caitlin, has a haircut ever changed your life this much?
No. Cannot say it has. Has not completely given me a 180 on my attitude.
Neither, but, you know.
I had a mohawk like Puck for a while there.
Pardon?
I had a mohawk like Puck for a while there.
Did it completely change your life and attitude?
It made me get someone pregnant. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding, obviously.
It made you just like Puck. Congratulations.
Oh my god. Sorry. Anyway, let's move on. This episode, probably the most important part of it for me, or at least when it came out, was actually Kurt and Rachel's relationship. And, you know, we've seen little bits throughout season two of them becoming, you know, very, very close to each other. But what was that? Did someone just squeeze that door?
I don't know. I didn't hear anything.
Caitlin?
No, I've been on mute.
Okay, I don't know what that was. Anyway, moving on. We'll go back. Big part of this episode, which was very important to me at the time, was Kurt and Rachel and their sort of relationship. Because I think this is the moment, you know, throughout this season, we've seen, you know, him be friends with, obviously, you know, very close with Mercedes, very close with Blaine, very close with Finn. But, you know, little bits developing that him and Rachel have something that they don't really have with anyone else. And this is the scene, this is the episode, and this is the moment where I think that they stop pretending that they don't, but where the show kind of is like, yeah, okay, this is the OTP BFFs. Like, we're not going to, you know, we're not going to pretend that, you know, he's still closer to Mercedes or anything like that. We're not going to, you know, do anything like... It's basically, you know, you've got these two people. At the time, they knew that these two kids were, you know, possibly their, you know, gold mine in terms of anything they wanted for the future in the show, that they were going to be the lead characters. And we have this, you know, this moment of they're there together. They're, you know, they know that they care about the same things, and they have, you know, obviously Kurt taking out Rachel out to breakfast at Tiffany's, and them talking about, you know, making the pact to come back to New York together and their future, and then breaking into the Gershwin Theater where Wicked is held and singing on the stage there and singing that song For Good about, which is the closing song of Wicked, which is very, you know, emotional between the two lead characters. And I just love all of this from start to finish. You know, no matter what beef I hold with Kurt or Rachel, I think that they are so good together, and I just love this, and I love sort of Kurt's influence on Rachel here. And I already have, like, had trouble, like, getting through the original song of For Good Without Crying. Like, I actually have a tattoo from that song with another friend of mine. And so, yeah, this is, like, when I knew this was happening, I remember I couldn't, I very rarely didn't listen to the music beforehand, or, like, but I didn't listen to the released music for this. I was like, no, I have to watch it in the episode. And then I did, and I think I was, like, in, like, a public internet cafe, but I was still, like, crazily crying. So that was good. God, I've done some weird things for Glee in my time.
haven't we all?
But, yes. But, yeah, there's some specific stuff with Kurt, sort of, and the wicked stuff that I wanted to talk about. But in general, yeah, Caitlin, how did you kind of feel slash react to the Kurt and Rachel stuff? Like, did you feel like that there was, like, a shift in their relationship at this point throughout the show? Or how did you sort of view what they were doing here?
And they do seem to cement the underpinnings that they've kind of laid before in this episode and kind of say, to the future, we are literally the future. So yeah, I would agree with that exactly. And I think it's sweet. They do have this really lovely moment together and really solidify what's a very important friendship for each of them.
Yeah. Jack, I know you're a big sort of fan of, like, to do anything to do with Mercedes, but Mercedes and Kurt's friendship. Do you think that, you know, they sort of shortchanged the Mercedes and Kurt friendship, or do you think that there's room for both of them, or that him and Rachel are actually better suited?
I mean, yeah, like you said, I'm a massive fan of Mercedes as of recently. Well, not recently, I guess, for quite a while now. But I think that with Kurt and Mercedes, their relationship is more based on, like, materialistic, like, similarities. Whereas, like, with Kurt and Rachel, like, I mean, although Kurt and Mercedes are very, very close, Kurt and Rachel are close on, like, a more personal and more, like, emotional understanding of each other. Whereas, and I'm sure Kurt and Mercedes are like that in some aspects. However, it's more prevalent and prominent with Kurt and Rachel. So, I mean, I think that Mercedes wasn't really shortchanged with her relationship with Kurt, because it was a good portrayal of how, like, some friendships do end in high school. Like, they do come back in the 100th episode, but, you know, things happen and, you know, you move on. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, fair enough. I always liked the sleepover scenes of
same.
You know, as a kind of three-way friendship, but you don't get too much of that, and so, yeah. I always found, like, that For Good scene when they went in there, I found that interesting, like, just the way that Kurt acted in that scene, because he was playing, like, when they sung the song, he was playing the Glinda role, and I don't know if this was done on purpose or not, but, like, the way that he was talking to Rachel before they started singing, the way that he was kind of encouraging her, and I won't even talk about, like, all of the emotional things that, like, Leah Michelle and Chris Colfer have said about this scene and what doing this scene meant to them and how it felt to sort of sing that together, because they've talked a lot about that. But there was something about the way that Chris was acting, or that Kurt was acting, it was really, like, sort of, I don't know, like, dreamlike, and it was really, like, I don't know, I hesitate to use the word magical, but I think that they were injecting a little bit of a fairy godmother tendency into him, in the way that it was just, sometimes Kurt is very detached from reality in a way that I think the show doesn't always focus on enough. Like, sometimes he is totally, you know, sardonic and grounded, but sometimes, you know, that's why we feed them glitter, Finn. Like, sometimes Kurt is really detached from reality. And it just makes me wonder, like, what's in his head sometimes. And this, not in a bad way, not in a, like, delusional, like, yeah, the pigeons can eat glitter, but the way that he was kind of, you know, dreaming up the orchestra and just talking to Rachel in that very kind of dreamy voice, yeah, just made me think of his sort of, like, I don't know, sweet fantasy world, where I think he is nicer than he is in real life, and things are nicer than they are in real life. And
I have a question about that. Like, I've never seen Wicked, Ben. You obviously have emotional connection to it, but
yeah, I've seen it.
Yeah, so is like that reflective? Like what you were just saying there, Natalie, is that reflective of, like, the characters in this part of the show? Like, is that
Yes, it is. That's the thing. And, like, he's playing Glinda, who is very. She's a little bit delusional.
That's pretty cool that they chose to do that, or that Chris chose to do that.
Character. Well, yeah, like, the Rachel is playing Elphaba, like the same character that sings Defying Gravity.
And is that in Dina and Kristen Chenoweth, or? Okay.
Yes, so Kurt's playing the Kristen
Chenoweth. Okay, alright.
And yeah, it is very indicative of that. Like, not perfect parallel, but there is something about it, like, that it just reminds me. And Glinda is, you know, the fairy godmother, or the good witch in Wizard of Oz, like the one that helps Dorothy. So yeah, I don't know, it just always made me kind of think of that. But
that's pretty cool.
The nationals competition, which is obviously the main part of the situation, the main part of the episode, has a few massive aspects. The first one is, like, Will's ongoing conversations with Dustin Goolsby, the coach of Vocal Adrenaline, who is played by... What's his name? I can't remember his name.
Cheyenne Jackson.
So Dustin Goolsby, who is the coach of Vocal Adrenaline and played by Cheyenne Jackson. And he was... I'd forgotten that this character was, like, hilarious. Like, I just remember him being kind of, like, ridiculous. But, oh my God.
They probably think I just broke up with you.
Like, he's so funny. And I love him. And I think he might have had a thing for Will. Like, I feel like there was subtext going on there. Like... I don't know. He was great, and I loved every single second he was
on the screen. Caitlin, I can't wait to get to your quote, because it's so funny.
Oh, my God. Caitlin, I added a bit into your quote, because I had the bit prior to it, and I was like, I'm just going to put it here, and I'm going to pick something else, and you can just read the whole quote.
That's great.
But I love him, and he was just so funny. I don't know. I just forgot that he was this funny. So yeah, anyone's thoughts on Dustin Goolsby, I guess? Like, any deep and meaningful thoughts or ridiculous thoughts about his presence as a, you know, Glee Club director in Nationals?
I don't know, I just know that Cheyenne Jackson was very close to getting the part of Will Schuester, so just imagine how different the show would have been if that actor was portraying Will Schuester. God.
I think I would have liked Will better. Like, I think, I don't know. Big part of why I don't like Will, well, not a big part, but I'd say some of the part that I don't like about Will is to do with Matthew Morrison. I don't know, I think Cheyenne Jackson could have done an interesting job with it and possibly been a little bit more, interesting, a little bit bitchier, maybe, a little bit meaner would have been good. But yeah, I don't know, I think he was hilarious and great, so I'm glad that he was there. He's obviously coaching Vocal Adrenaline, and Rachel runs into Sunshine Corazon in the bathroom, who's like throwing up from nerves. And we didn't do the premiere episode or Night of Neglect, so it's the first time we've seen her in the flashbacks. But you know, she is the Filipino girl that came to McKinley, wanted to be in the Glee Club, was too good at singing, so Rachel like terrorized her basically, and then she got snapped up by Vocal Adrenaline, and Rachel has to sort of convince her that she still loves singing and stuff. So yeah, I mean, did you guys like the little rounding up of this plot line? Like, are you glad that Rachel kind of made amends or whatever? Because we didn't cover this plot line originally, but you know, I suppose watching this episode tells you everything you need to know about it in case you forgot. So yeah, Caitlin, what did you think of her?
I mean, it was good of Rachel to suck it up and acknowledge that she was jealous and afraid of her talent, and when she tells Finn, I'm making something right. So that was good. I appreciated that, because really, she was really horrible at the beginning.
So bad. So bad. Yeah. Jack, how about you?
I don't really like Sunshine. Like, I kind of think the character's a bit pointless. Like, I understand they're trying to, like, just create that show choir rivalry, but no, I did like Rachel, how she sucked it up and admitted to her mistakes, so that was good.
That character needed to be in the season more to make to really things care. More meaningful. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't think that Charisse, the actor that played her, is the strongest actor.
No.
So like, I think that some of her stuff came across a bit.
They probably just brought her on for the voice, because she's got a fantastic voice, but you know.
They always take that opportunity to have guest stars who are really strong singers, like semi-famous or famous really strong singers, to be like the leading player of another team. Like, that's quite common for Glee.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, so they can just give them a really big showy number without too much acting. But yeah, she wasn't the strongest actor, though I did like her in the first episode. I thought she was cute, and this was, you know, nice of Rachel. And then Jesse obviously shows up, also, like, even though he, you know, isn't helping them anymore, he shows up and, you know, says he couldn't stay away from the competition, and Will's like, you know, from the show or from her about Rachel, and I'm like, he's like almost a student, you're a teacher, don't, like, you know, and he's talking about one of your students, don't weigh in on their personal life. just don't, just shut up, Will Schuster. But yeah, Caitlin, what did you think of, you know, I guess Jesse's feelings for Rachel at this point, and like, what, again, what's going on with him?
Yeah, he is in love with her, and he is like head over heels in love with her, and I love him, and I love that he loves her.
So I think he's just really lost, like, he just doesn't know what to do.
And he's kind of, like, latched onto Rachel because she's, like, the one thing he does know. Like, he knows how he feels about her. So that's the only, like, anchor he has.
Yep.
This was the first episode that I really thought that as well. Like, I did feel he was quite genuine in the, you know, prom episode when he came back. This episode was the first episode that I was just like, oh, he is, you know, he's really, really in love with her. And, you know, that's probably, you know, sucks for him. But yeah, the way that he delivers the line that he delivers after they come off stage is just so, it's so perfectly him and so perfectly revealing for his character, but in totally in character. He's a very well written character, or the actor carries it very well, one of those two. And it's just, I love him. I would watch entire seasons starring Jesse. I think that he is great, obviously, in so many ways, and I really hope that he comes back in season 6, even for one episode, please, for the love of God.
I'd like that, just because I'm on a kick of bringing all old characters back in.
But then New Direction's actual performance of their two original songs, we have Finn and Rachel's duet where they kiss at the end, and then they have their, you know, Light Up the World number. What did you think of these original songs, I guess, compared to other original songs they've done, or, you know, just in general? Do you think that they were impressive, or do you think they sort of deserve to lose? Jack, how about you?
I mean,
you like performance. You always like the competition.
Yeah, I do always like the competition numbers, but I liked how these songs were kind of crappy, and they got the place that their performance deserved. So that was nice. Where, like, every now and then we're like, did they really deserve to win? I don't know. But I do really like Pretending, actually. I think Pretending is very, very nice. Light Up the World isn't that great, but I even watching it for like a 20th time, it is still so awkward to see Finn and Rachel kiss at the end.
Really? You find that? I mean, I don't really think about it that much. But yes, I very much think that they probably didn't not win because of the kiss. I think they probably didn't win because they let, like, Britney sing lead on a crappy song at
But her part wasn't that, like, big. It was just like a little rap part, like, you know.
Oh, I don't know. It was still pretty bad. But yeah, I don't know. Maybe the kiss was the reason, but they were not. Those songs were not so good. And I think that something like Loser Like Me probably wouldn't have gone down that well at, you know, big glamorous New York. It might have done okay in, like, regional Midwest, you know, championship.
Yeah.
Yeah, they needed much more for this. They didn't really know what they were competing with. You know, Will should have known that they weren't actually, that they couldn't just be like, oh, how sweet, they wrote their own songs, like, that it wasn't gonna, like, hold up.
That was kind of funny that was kind of funny about this is that, like, Will honestly, I mean, I guess this is kind of the point, actually, but Will, like, does nothing. Like, he gives them the songs to write. I'm guessing he gives them the choreography to do because they do it the night before. So he literally, they don't even need him. But then I guess it is kind of what the show was going for, like, how he let them down. So, yeah.
Yeah, he totally did. Caitlin, what did you think of their overall final performance?
I mean, I also think that they got the place they deserved, that they weren't that great.
50 isn't bad.
No, but they did not deserve to place, and go forward to compete for the number one at all. I have a soft spot for Light Up the World. It's one of those songs that I don't think is that great, but I like to jam out to it and just say,
I'd agree with that.
I give no fucks. Like, I enjoy it.
That's fine.
But
yeah,
it's not that great of a musical number and should not have won nationals. So I'm glad it didn't.
Yeah.
And a cappella all girls choir singing Usher's Yeah, that is a song that I can rap a lot, embarrassingly. So that was very nice to say that on the show. They're like crumping it in those white dresses. It was awesome.
Why has no one on this show ever done R. Kelly's remix to Ignition?
I cannot say I know that song.
Jack!
I might recognize it.
It's the remix to Ignition, hot and fresh out the kitchen. Mama rolling her body, got every man in here wishing. No?
But nothing.
Sipping on coke and rum, I'm like, damn right, I'm drunk. It's the freaking weekend, baby, I'm about to have. No?
Gig on. No, I don't know. I've never.
Oh my, after the show, it's the after party. Oh my god, I can't even talk to you right now. I'm sorry.
I know a lot.
I know. No, I'm really shocked that you don't. But no, it's fine. Anyway, let's move on from me singing. But yes, certainly, yeah, that kind of, you know, originality of that all-girls choir and the creativity of, you know, the songs that they did and then, you know, obviously the sheer power of Sunshine's voice. Yeah, it wasn't New Directions at their best, and I think that's probably a wise choice. Why do you think the show chose to make this, you know, that way, to have them fail at this, you know, New York venture that was meant to be this huge, big deal? Like, so it would be a bigger deal when they won in season 3?
Yeah, definitely.
What do you think? Yeah, like, so they'd have somewhere to go with season 3?
Yeah, it makes them
underdogs.
Yeah, because in season 3, they start off the season being like, the whole club hates us again, so. And then, do they even like him in the start? I don't know, whatever.
No, probably not. And then, obviously, Finn and Rachel kiss because they can't, like, stop themselves, and that's apparently what causes them the competition.
But not really.
And then we go back.
But not really.
They just like to make that excuse.
Well, like, a lot of people weren't digging it. Like, the crowd didn't even clap after Will had to stand up and prompt it.
That was awkward.
Yeah.
And then very quickly as well, I'll put in, sorry, I forgot to actually write this, but once we get back to Lima, we had a few different, you know, scenes in Lima of, you know, Finn and Rachel sort of talking in the library about, you know, maintaining their relationship, Santana and Brittany talking about, you know, the family of Glee Club, Sam and Mercedes kind of secretly showing us that they got together, and and Kurt and Blaine saying I love you to each other in a questionable manner.
And Kurt looks like he's about to shit himself.
Oh my god. Let's talk about that for a moment, because apparently we can't avoid another opportunity to drag Blaine. So, Caitlin, this I love you between Kurt and Blaine. How do you feel about it? No,
I mean, this might shock you, but I always thought Kurt just looked really surprised and not pained. Like, I just thought he looked really taken off guard, because Blaine says it so casually. It's not a big moment. He just kind of, I love you. And he's just like, oh my god, where did that come from? But after having heard you say it and watching it this time, I was like, he does look a little alarmed and pained.
I thought he looked stunned. That I wasn't like, oh my god, Blaine's really horrified him or anything like that. I think that he mentally is probably pretty pleased and all of that kind of stuff. Like that he, you know, he's, oh my god, my trophy boyfriend loves me. This is the goal. Yes. But I think maybe that Kurt's like slightly sociopathic or something. That he maybe doesn't like feel inside what he thinks he should feel or something like that. And that he just, the way he sort of says back, I love you too, seems awkward, and I just never bought it. I don't know, I feel like Chris Colfer is a better actor than that I love you, if you know what I mean. If he really meant I love you, I feel like he's a better actor than that moment. And so I feel like that, and so that is what made me always think it was done on purpose, is it just like, oh, great, okay, I've got what I wanted, but, you know, I finally found what I wanted, but I actually don't want this, oh my god. Not that he doesn't want it, he just doesn't know how to handle it. But I don't know, this time it hit me less badly than it did the first time I watched it. The first time I watched it, I was just like, what was that? And this time I was just like, oh, okay, I can maybe buy it. But I don't know, it's certainly not the response I would have wanted, you know, as a hardcore Quain shipper. Though I'm sure people at the time were very delighted.
I don't know. Like I say, Kurt looks like he's going to like shit himself of being afraid. And then but he looks even worse when Blaine proposes to him, where he's like, fuck, what do I do? Run away. Shit, I can't move. Yes. Oh, yes, okay.
Oh, my God.
That's how that went down.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely an interpretation of that scene. But... oh, God. I don't know, Quain, man. Obviously, we've got Sam and Mercedes getting together, so, yeah. How is that for you, Jack?
Sorry, I missed that. What'd you say?
Sam and Mercedes getting together and keeping it secret. How is that for you?
I mean, yeah, to them getting together, they should stay together and never have broken up, but I don't know why they want to keep it secret. Like, do they kind of just don't want to go through the act of telling everyone they're together? I don't know, like, what's sort of stopping them.
Like, drama, because like people, like everyone makes like relationships into like a gross drama, like in Glee Club. So
I don't know, like I don't even think it's like an interracial thing either. Like it's just
no, not at all. I think it's just that it's like, oh my god, everyone whose relationship is known about goes through crazy drama. So let's just keep this to ourselves and enjoy it, so that all of these people aren't butting in some way.
Actually, no, I would agree with that actually, because especially season 5, Sam and Mercedes are, I feel like they portray one of the most realist relationships in the show. So I wouldn't be surprised if they're like, yeah, let's just keep this hush hush, and so we don't have to avoid our crazy friends and all the drama they have. So. No, yeah. I would agree with that. I like that interpretation. Yeah.
Yeah. And then Brittany and Santana, their scene I quite like, which I'm going to talk about in a minute. But, yeah, let's go down the list of favorite moments. So, Caitlin, what was yours?
So, mine was when Kurt and Rachel sneak into the Gershwin, they get stopped by the security guard. But the security guard, I love him, because he's just so over people sneaking into the theater with their big Broadway dreams. He's just like, you got 15 minutes, and walks away.
God. I would love that security guard to come back and see Rachel.
Oh, that would have been awesome if he was in, like, opening night, yeah.
Or just, like, even now, be like, I remember you. You came in here with your big Ohio dreams. What happened? Why are you stuck in Ohio again teaching this dumb kid? Why aren't you on the stage?
I want that so bad.
You know, the security guard to be the one that turns her life around. I don't know.
I think anybody who turns Rachel's life around, like, is going to quickly become my favorite character in the show. Like, even if it's, like Blaine and Karofsky who do it, like, they'll be my favorite pairing.
They save Rachel.
Anyone who saves Rachel is going to be my favorite.
God. How about you then, Jack, for your favorite moment?
Mine was Santana in the... Well, a few moments from the New York number when they're running around New York. Santana, when she's like... two moments where she's by the fountain and she does her line, and then she like raises her arms and the fountain behind her, like the geishas shoot up. That just looked badass. And then when she's... Her little like humor moments when she's... Like, they're all sitting by the bench, everyone leaves, and then she sits next to, like, the cop that's on the bench and just, like, is, like, sort of flirting and playing with him a bit. I thought that was funny. And also when the girls are all on those big stairs, and they just look badass. They look sexy as hell, and Rachel does her little, like, move, and, yeah, it was really cool. I like the girls in this one.
Yeah. One day, Jack, I want to go with you to New York. You should come with me one time.
One time, when I can afford it. Yeah, for years.
Yeah, I don't know if I'll be going there anytime soon, but yeah. Yeah, mine was, well, like Kurt and Rachel's little friend date, especially kind of, yeah, just the conversations they have at Breakfast at Tiffany's, singing for good as well, but just basically their relationship. But I also really like Brittany's speech at the end about, like, you know, the Glee Club being family, and the way that she sort of lays stuff on the line for Santana and makes her kind of admit her feelings and all that kind of stuff. And she mentions, but Brittany also mentions, she's like, I know I'm going to be a bridesmaid at Mike and Tina's wedding. Why aren't we ending season 6 with Mike and Tina's wedding? Why
please.
Do we have
a crappy wedding? Please.
Like,
even just them like, getting back together would be enough for me.
Like, why do we have to end with these, like, terrible weddings instead of one that would have been, like, relatively plausible?
My favorite parts of Glee, like, especially in the first 3 seasons, is, I don't know if you guys have noticed it, but Brittany's obsession with Mike and Tina. Like, her and Tina, like...
What?
Well, because it's just moments that never get addressed, but, like, Brittany and Tina were always close friends, and then she mentions this part, what you just said, and then, I mean, I remember this because I'm a crazy person, but in, like, when they sing We Are Young, when the Glee Club and the Trouble Tones, you, like, form into the New Directions again, like, Brittany runs up to Mike and Tina and hugs them. Like, moments like that are, like, spread out a lot through the first 3 seasons, and it's something I've always, like, appreciated because I always watch for, like, friendships in the show.
I think she's quite close with both of them, like, because, yeah, she does a lot of, like, you know, dance solos and rehearsals and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I think she's quite close with both of them, so, yeah.
Unspoken friendships is what I love. Yeah.
Anyway, so I just really liked her laying that on the line for Santana and, you know, whatever they're going to turn into, but, you know, it's... Again, she's just really honest and eloquent with her feelings in a way that doesn't take away from her whole, like, oh, I'm a dippy, strange, like, person, like, personality. Like, it's not, like, instantly, like, oh, she's totally different to how she was. It's stuff that still fits with her. But she just seems more real, and there's, yeah, just these few episodes, they did really well with Brittany, and I don't understand, like, why they couldn't just do that all the time. But, oh well. How about you for quotes, Caitlin, if we go through this?
Natalie made an addition to my quote. She translated Will's part of the line.
Oh, I didn't mean to put Will. I meant to put Dustin's line before Will's, but I put it in wrong.
I mean, if you read it the way it says now, it looks like Schuster says he wants to whip his kids.
Yeah.
I wish that was true. No, I added in Dustin's line before that because I just loved that I would literally.
Well, the line that was actually from the episode is when Will and Goolsbee are sitting at the bar.
No, this is actually from the episode.
It is.
Yeah. Well, the part that I picked out.
Go ahead.
Will is like, I love my kids. And Goolsbee goes, what? No, you don't. They're hideous. My kids are at least attractive. Yours look like they haven't been baked properly.
Of every one of his lines, like even when he got through the like yours look like they haven't been, I forgot what it was gonna be, if you know what I mean. And I just, everything he said was so funny and I just died. As we just kind of struggled to get out. Yeah, I love the bit prefacing that where Dustin Goolsbee sitting there going, I hate my kids, I would literally whip them if I it's just like, oh my god, he's insane and I love him. I just adore him, but yeah. I'll go mine because Jax is a bit more serious and I don't want to like lower the
sorry
team. I'll just these together because mine was another Dustin one where he sort of, you know, is talking to Will about his like Broadway dreams and stuff. It might even be the same scene, but he says, yeah, you're tearing up, people are starting to stare, I bet they think I just love you.
I love it so much.
It's so bitchy, it's so funny, but I love it. Jack,
well, now, do you want to read your second quote you got there, then I'll read mine?
Oh my god, I forgot about my second quote. Sorry, I just put this other one here, just because what we were talking about before with Jesse, when they come off stage and Jesse comes and sees them in, you know, the hall after they perform, and he goes straight up, you know, he overhears Finn talking about, like, you know, their magical kiss, and he just goes straight up and he's like, that kiss was unprofessional, it was too personal and intense, the judges won't like it, they'll consider it common and vulgar, and it'll cost you nationals. Hi, Rachel, you look amazing, and you sounded great. You just shouldn't have kissed him. It was so,
he couldn't help himself, he had to do it.
He couldn't, he's just, I love him, he's so ridiculous. But, like, yeah, he all of that stuff that he said to Finn was true, but it also wasn't super cutting. It wasn't like, you did this, it was really like, I don't know, it was like, as opposed to being malicious, it was, like, filterless, if you know what I mean. And I really love Jesse's terrible lack of filter. And the way that he said, like, the way that his whole face changes when he talks to Rachel, that was when I, like, 100% knew that he was in love with her, if you know what I mean. Like, and I just died. I don't know. He's so like, and I just...
And I love that Blaine, in his conversation with Kurt later, agrees with Jesse. I'm just like, why have you two never met?
Oh, I want them to meet. Do they never meet?
They've never met, no.
Only time they cross paths again would be next Nationals.
But they don't have a season.
Yeah.
Please. Oh my, season 6. It's all I want. Blaine and Jesse. Please.
And Skylar Aston, what's his name?
Oh my god. Yeah,
John Baptiste, yeah.
John Baptiste was a bro.
I'm just like imagining the three of those people in the same room and I just died of the awesome.
They probably all start making out or something.
Oh god, don't.
Okay.
But yeah, no, Jesse and Blaine, I feel like this is important. Like, I feel like it's really important and I feel like the show is like wasting their time. Anyway.
Okay.
But yeah, I always love that delivery of his like kind of breathlessness. Hi Rachel, you look amazing, and he's just so ridiculous. But yes, Jack, take us out with something a little bit less ridiculous.
Yeah. So as Natalie said, mine is a bit more emotional and stuff. I'm sorry, but this is mine with Rachel when her and Kurt finish singing For Good, and Rachel says, "Thank you, Kurt. I see it now. I don't have to choose between my career and love because this stage, Broadway, New York, that's my true love." And I really like that because obviously, as we know, I think Rachel should have stayed in New York, and I liked her as Funny Girl and on Broadway. So, yeah, so that was nice to see her still young with all these aspirations, and yeah.
Restrained than I thought it was going to be, Jack. I thought it was going to be like a lot of anger about season 5
or something,
like, you know, hypocrisy and.
I know. Well, season 6 is starting up like this Friday, this Saturday, so I've got all my anger out with flashbacks. So let's just hope it contains and stays that way. Things go well.
Okay, so the song list quickly to run through. We obviously had a seminal Glee classic, My Cup. Which honestly, I sing.
Same. Me and my sister, my sister would like call me up right now and start singing My Cup, and we would belt it out.
Not the whole thing, but just the chorus, like My Cup, saying what's up. Anyway, the I Love New York / New York mashup, Still Got Tonight, which was Will Schuster's crappy original song, Bella Notte, For Good, which was obviously the other Glee Club that we talked about. As Long As You're There, which was Sunshine, and then Pretending and Light Up the World, the original songs of New Direction. So does anyone have any thoughts about any of the numbers that we haven't already discussed?
I didn't really like a majority of the music in this episode. Like, it was fine, but it wasn't like... I rarely go back and listen to most of the songs from this one. Like, the only thing... I listened to For Good a bit, and I love Yeah. But other than that, I'm like, you know what? New York was okay. Still Got Tonight, no. Bella Notte, eh. As Long As You're There, you can't go As Long As You're There. I still don't believe that As Long As You're There was performed by the same Glee Club that did Bohemian Rhapsody, and then Pretending and Light Up Your World was like, eh. So, you know, yeah.
I like, obviously, For Good a lot. Bella Notte was really cute for the moment that it was in. Like, it was really sweet, but it wasn't like a showstopper or anything. I was relatively underwhelmed, aside from the For Good moment, with most of the songs.
Especially being a finale, you know.
Yeah. How about you, Caitlin? You said you're a fan of Light Up the World.
Yeah, that's the only song on this list that I actually have. So, obviously not super big on the rest of the music.
Yeah, it wasn't a huge impact, I don't think, the songs in this. I mean, the story was, but the songs not so much. But, yeah, does anyone have any points that they, you know, we haven't covered, that they, you know, wanted to bring up about any of these episodes or flashbacks in general before we sign off with a little bit of news?
I think this flashbacks project got us through the hiatus all right. Like, I mean, it doesn't even seem like it was – I mean, I guess because, like, everyone's lives has been very busy, like all of us, I think. But it doesn't really seem like it was that long ago since season 5 ended, to be honest, even though it's been, like, the biggest break the Glee's ever had.
Yeah, what, like 9 months?
Yeah, it's something ridiculous.
Thanks to anyone who's actually listened and enjoyed these flashbacks, and we shall most hopefully be, you know, obviously doing the season 6 episodes, you know, directly after they air, or, you know, a couple of days after they air. you know, for the short season that we're going to have. So yeah, hopefully you can, you know, stick with us until the end of Glee. And you know, let us know if obviously you are watching and what was important points to you and all of that kind of stuff throughout the episodes that are coming up. But yeah. Yeah, Caitlin, anything on the finale before we go into this?
No.
Not really? Cool. Jack, you had a couple of things that you wanted to talk about, in regards to our projects and a couple of season 6 songs.
Yeah, so we got a tweet from on the Glee Chat Twitter account the other day just asking what happened to our Glee Chat After Dark idea that we sort of were teasing a bit throughout our recap of season 5. And the reason, I mean, I kept forgetting to sort of say this in the flashback episode, so I apologize, but the reason why we didn't go with that is because we sort of had tossed up between two ideas of doing the flashback projects that we did and Glee Chat After Dark, which would have just been like an alternate episode, more like just not really about Glee. Yeah, so that's the reason why we chose with this one. And I think that we all had a bit more fun with flashbacks than we may have had with After Dark. So, yeah, that was what happened there, just in case anyone was wondering.
Yeah, I mean, something I'd probably contribute to that is I obviously know all of these people, you know, pretty well after podcasting with them for so long. But I've never personally been particularly interested in just doing a podcast in talking about, like, myself or my thoughts, if you know what I mean. Not to say that other people who want to do that aren't valid, but I would have, you know, much rather stuck to the flashbacks as we did with a, you know, thematic thing where we're talking about, you know, episodes of a show or whatever. I wouldn't have really known what to say on, like, a permanent Glee Chat After Dark. Sometimes we've had incidental conversations, you know, within our show, but I wouldn't have known what to do with a show that was just meant to be conversation.
Yeah. I agree with that, and that was partially, I mean, we didn't really even have, like, a solid concept of what After Dark was going to be, but we did have one with flashbacks, so, and we were all more intrigued by that idea, so, yeah.
Hopefully that's okay.
Hopefully you guys enjoyed that, yeah. Okay, so, now on to, I mean, we've got a few songs that have been released from, the first few episodes of season 6, and, I know we haven't really covered too much spoiler stuff on Glee Chat, because, like, storylines have been released of, like, what's happening in season 6, like,
entire,
yeah, so that's partially, I think that's why we didn't really talk about it on here, because we'd be giving away all of season 6, and I've honestly been trying to avoid a lot. However, I have been unable to avoid the songs, and I have not wanted to, so I'm going to talk about the boring one first, the song that everyone knew Glee, I mean, I guess, okay, this is the song, like, we spoke earlier on, like,
this is the one, this is the Friday,
this is the fog, Let It Go, as we know, is being sung by Rachel in season 6. And, I mean, I've never seen Frozen properly, and I've avoided Let It Go for a very long time until they did it on Australian X Factor. The song is okay, but it's just air. Like, that's all I can say about it. And Rachel's rendition is just air. Do you guys have any big feelings about it, or?
I don't like Frozen.
I didn't think you would.
I saw it at the movies because everyone was like, oh my god, Frozen is the most amazing thing ever. I think Frozen is not that great, and I have so many, like, continuity / like unresolved questions about, like, so many aspects of Frozen. It's not a good movie. Like, sorry, but it's not good. And there are so many other movies that are better than this movie, like Tangled for a 3D animation Disney movie with songs, Lilo and Stitch for a better Disney movie about sisters.
Oh my god, yes.
Frozen is not a good movie. I'm sorry if you people like it. Go and watch it again and actually pay attention to how inconsistent it is and terrible. It's so bad. And I know Caitlin has been, like, killing herself all year. They've, like, hounded it in.
Oh, my God.
See, I was going to so many rage. At the time, but I was like, I just don't really want to, like, see Frozen in it when I reach season 4.
It's made me not want to watch Once Upon a Time. I've never seen Once Upon a Time, and I wanted to catch up with it, and now
exactly,
I don't.
That's what I mean, yeah.
So, yeah. Look, it's okay, Frozen. It's okay. It is not the all that in a bag of chips that, you know, apparently people are making it out to be. I understand that, like, you know, sometimes animated movies take off, but my God, it is not worth the hype.
Yeah. Okay, so to move on to the next one. Now, I'm going to have to breathe a bit before we get into this, however. So the song Take On Me by the 80s band A-ha, big classic, everyone knows it. Even if you don't know the name or the band, you know the song. Like, they've released a video of the Glee Club doing Take On Me, and it is akin – okay, first of all, it sounds – freaking amazing. Not how I thought it would sound. I didn't know they were going to do the vocals on the do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Yeah, they did, like, the, like, little vocals on that. However, other than that, freaking amazing. So good. Artie, Rachel, Mercedes, everyone sounds so good. However, the part that I wasn't expecting, and I don't think you're expecting either, Natalie, from what you said earlier.
I was so shocked. I was not. Well, when you saw this, when you were like, I need to talk about Take On Me, I'm like, it can't be that good. I mean, I know it's going to be fun, but it can't be that good. Then I went and watched the clip, and I was down.
Yeah, well, okay, so what we're talking about is the song is very iconic, and it's honestly one of my favorite songs ever. Like, I honestly probably in my top 10 favorite songs. It's so good. So that's one reason why I was excited for it. However, the music video is also very iconic in the fact that it involves, like, the people in the music video, like, going through, like, video and then very artistic, line drawing, black and white, hand drawing, yeah. Like, animating the music video. And they decided to go that route with Glee. So you've got the characters and Sue mucking around with them, like, hand-drawing what's happening. It's a little hard to explain, but I was not expecting it.
It's referential of the original video in that it has that, you know, aspect of them going through the screen into scenes where it's all animated hand-drawings instead of video, which... Glee's, like, recreated music videos before.
Yeah, like The Nation, like, and Britney Spears and things like that. They've done it before, but...
If you told me that they were going to recreate this video, I would have been like, that's really weird and totally unnecessary. And it's going to be one of those moments that a lot of people are like, why are they, like, breaking reality for this? I don't care. I wasn't expecting it, and it actually is really, really
it's
cool.
It's freaking awesome. I was already so excited.
I probably would have been like, that's really dumb if you told me about it, but it I love it. Like, it looks really good, and it's just, you know, one of those moments of... It feels... I know, Jack, you've been watching Community, and, you know, with its ups and downs, you've appreciated the more consistent sort of absurdism in it, that they, you know, have the boundaries of their universe where that kind of stuff can happen. This almost felt like a Community moment to me.
I'd agree with that.
With their weird, like, it didn't feel like a moment where Glee was forcing you to accept a weird reality. It felt quite different, and I really, really liked it.
Like, because I was already so, I can't, off the top of my head, name another song that I've been so excited for Glee to do. Like, I've just, like, you know, I like a lot of songs that they do, and I'm excited for some, but I was anticipating to see this for so long. And, and even just, like, I don't want to get too spoilery. I apologize, guys. But, like, even like, when this the clip ends, and it ends with them all being in the cafeteria and all the Glee Club dancing around, it's very reminiscent of how they used to do it in terms of, like, if you even look at Britney and Kurt, they're doing, like, the hip slap that they do in Single Ladies. And I need to watch it a few more times to see if I can catch if there's any other, like, you know how, like, in My Life Was Stuck Without You, they perform... parts of the different numbers they did. I want to see if that's in this one with other parts. So, but it's freaking amazing. Go watch it. You will not regret it. Caitlin, have you seen it?
The only one I've watched is Sing, so I haven't seen this one.
Oh, I forgot about Sing. Okay. I forgot.
Oh, I haven't watched that
is,
yet.
Okay, now I don't want to talk about it because I need your reaction on a certain part of it. And Caitlin, I don't know if you know what I'm talking about. It's when they go get something for a character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They know what you're talking about.
That made me like, are you fucking kidding me? But when, like...
In a good or a bad way?
In a funny way. In a, like, okay, of course this is happening.
I'm just going to... I love everything about it.
You watch it now and then we get back to it.
Oh, my God. I could go watch it if you guys want to stay on the line and then you could cut it, get the time out, and then put
I'd be
it back
fine
in
doing
if everyone
I want your reaction. Actually, is there a way we can, like, leave you on? And then, like, you, like, voice your reaction, like, as you watch it.
Yeah, if you really want, like, if you have time to do this, like, let me see how fast I can.
Hey, I don't know how much you have to go.
We should wrap up pretty quickly, okay. But right. Look, here, Sing from Loser Like Me. Okay, all right, I'm going to do this, and you can listen to me.
It's late in the evening, glass on the side, I sat with you for most of the night. Ignoring everybody here, we wish they would disappear. So
can we get down? Who is that one wobble that's singing the lead? I'm like, yeah, that was cute when Rachel. I'm assuming that like they're going to like to check out the new competition for Rachel, because obviously the old wobbles are going to be gone, like the old ones, so they've got to have a new wobble team.
Well, Blaine's been coaching them at this point.
Has he? I thought that, like, this is where, like, he wants to start coaching them.
No, it's, like, it's pretty clear. He's watching them, like, and he starts them. Like, he's been coaching them, and this is what they've been working on with Blaine.
It's the part where they... Okay, so what happens is... They have a shrine of Blaine's jacket in the warbler room, bow ties all around it, and then they go and get it for him and give Blaine the jacket and he joins in. They have a fucking shrine for Blaine Anderson.
Well, that's Blaine's office. I think so, because that is his office. We've seen in promos, like, he's sitting behind the desk with his feet up on the desk.
Okay, so
I'm pretty sure that's his office.
I interpreted it like the Warblers, like, because the Warblers have never had a leader, like when they were. So I thought that they had done this themselves. Blaine and Rachel have come to watch them, and then they're like, shit, Blaine's here, let's try and recruit him to be our leader, and then they do that. That's what I thought, and then he's gonna start coaching.
I don't think that's it.
Hey, I got a little personal perspective.
Can I just say, like, when. There are some Sebastian Smythe dance moves in there, so Blaine has clearly been talking to Sebastian about how to coach the Warblers.
Oh my god. This is oh wow, that was interesting. I don't know, I want to hear the studio version of that, because I want to know if they keep the rap in.
Yeah, I was wondering that as well.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that'll be interesting. Yeah. But that was something, that sure was something. So, sorry, Caitlin, are you saying that you hope it's them seducing Blaine to teach them?
No,
I
thought it was pretty clear that Blaine has been coaching them because...
And he was showing them off.
Yeah, because in the promos we've seen, like, when Rachel comes back, Blaine is like, oh, well, I'm the new coach of the Warblers. So I think he's bringing her to them to see them.
He looks like he's doing pretty well.
Yeah.
Like, he's not, like, depressed and, like, you know, whatever it is that he's meant to be from, like... Like, he looks like he's fine.
So I think it's pretty much, like, he comes in and he's, like, proudly showing them off to Rachel, being like, look what we've been working on. And they're really excited about it, and they bring him in excited because they like their coach. Yeah.
What's funny about that, then, is they're pretty much, like, going, nah, we have Blaine, you don't, like, to Rachel, like, by giving him the jacket and making him dance with them. It's, like, sucked in.
Yeah. And I like that it's kind of a message that he always belonged there, and it was wrong that he...
Yeah, I think that's right as well.
If you know what I mean, like that it's not that he had to be in school forever, but that he would, like, that he was not meant to leave that school. If you know what I mean, for his schooling, that it was wrong that he did.
Yeah.
So yeah.
But it wasn't bad. It was the Wobbles numbers are always pretty good, so it was nice.
Yeah. And I wonder if any of these new Warblers will have a personality. Like,
oh yeah, I'm interested.
Crazy eyes. I love crazy eyes.
I like oranges and you're black.
All right. God. But yeah, I cannot believe the blazer shrine. So yeah, Caitlin, do you think that they built that for him, or do you think he built his own blazer
shrine? I think he built his own blazer shrine. I think that's the blazer he left behind.
Yeah, I agree.
Had it give it back to him, and then he, like, put up with his bow ties.
Honestly, this scenario was very plausible. Like, they admire him so much, but he also admires himself a lot as well.
That's his, like, yeah.
Either way, it's very plausible.
Like, maybe it's not, like, a shrine to himself, but maybe it's, like, you know...
These are my happy things.
Like, I love my bow ties.
Yeah, well, like, just a reminder of, obviously, you know, that they wanted him back and all of that stuff, and that time when they tried to get him to come back because McKinley sucks and he's not the right guy.
But it's kind of a balance, too, because the blazer is balanced by the bow ties, which he can't wear when he's in the Dalton uniform, so he kind of... He also, if you notice, is wearing a belt buckle with a B on it, and I'm like...
Are you kidding me?
Are you serious? I'm obsessed. I love him.
He's so crazy. Oh my god. I'm not surprised one bit.
Oh my god, he's so ridiculous and I love him. Why, Blaine? Why? He looks very happy and fulfilled. So how about Kurt just stays in New York and doesn't try and disrupt his apparently happy life?
Petrovsky.
Oh god. All right. Okay. On that note, we should probably round off. Season 6 is starting this Friday. We're all very,
I'm excited. Like, watching the end of the prom episode during Dancing Queen, I got really emotional. Like, fuck, this is the end. Like, we're at the end of this freaking show. I got really, really emotional on that when they were having fun and all cheery. I was like, well, yeah, this is sad.
Yeah, we'll probably be a mess. Let's not lie.
Yes.
Let's hope it's going to be good and there's more delightful blazers and less horrible.
More Kendra.
I hate you, Will.
It wouldn't be a flashback ending if I didn't bring up Kendra.
I really hope that this season, like, totally drags Will. It probably won't, but I really hope it does.
I like the idea that they're all probably, like, they're all the old kids are back at the school, like, fuck you, Will, you left us, now we're going to do this, like, pick up this glee club.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know, like, what they think of him for going over to, like...
That's what I want. I want a conversation with them, though, being like, are you serious? Like, you did this?
Loser Like Me and Homecoming, I think, next Friday. So, yeah, until then, we shall see you all later. So, thank you and bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.